United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Tracy and friends here on the WSOM AM 600. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock here on a great, great day.
Oh, man.
On the 30th of July.
It's beautiful
outside, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
it's Jeffrey's birthday.
Who?
It's Jeffrey's birthday.
I thought Jeffrey's birthday was tomorrow.
I don't know. I was on Facebook this morning. Happy birthday, Jeff.
Oh, happy birthday, Jeff. Well, since he's not here, we're going to buy him a gift. Sorry, I thought it was tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, if he's here, I took him to lunch.
Yeah, but he's here. So we ain't got to worry about that. Ooh, that's good. So, you know, you missed out on a whole lot, Jeffrey. Sorry about that. We'll play happy birthday for you. How's that do? Hey, today is the 30th of July, 2014. And I got Daniel Halpern who's going to Halper.
We've got a really, really big show today.
Yeah, we've got a good show today. And
we got Daniel Halper, we got CNG, we've got all kinds of stuff.
I gotta bring this up. Have you heard about the Stephen A. Smith suspension?
The what?
Stephen A. Smith.
I read briefly about it, but I don't know.
We gotta play what he said. I agree with him. And I may be the only woman in the world that agrees with what he said. And I have a problem with all this apologizing for what you say.
Well, I agree with what he said too.
Which you know,
I heard what he said when he first said it. Yeah,
I agree with what he said, and I don't think we get it, and so we don't want to hear that. And they're like, well, you can't say that. Women don't need to antagonize men. We don't. I'll tell you right now.
A man's wife knows how to spin that man up faster than anybody on this planet.
And we do.
And yeah, and especially in the first part of your marriage. The first 5 years of your marriage.
Intentionally
women,
we do.
Women fight dirty.
And don't get me wrong. I don't think any man should beat her. But women, we do some stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, women are more emotional on average than men. And
we want to hurt you, so yeah. If you hurt me, I'm going. Women kick people, men in the groin. They do some crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, don't hit me. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think women ought to get beat down and drugged down the street. I'm not saying that. But I have a friend, and he's a huge car enthusiast, huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he babies his car like he does his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you would have a hard time when you decide to go at him and go outside and scratch his car. Or spray paint it.
And let me guess, his wife knocked all the windows out of it.
You know, it's not a good thing.
No.
It was, and she got mad. You know, it wasn't his wife, it was his girlfriend.
That happened to my LPO in the service. Yeah, his wife went out and knocked all the windows. He had a classic truck, and his wife went out and knocked all the windows all the glass out of it.
Windows is one thing. Taking an aluminum bat to your car is another. You know, women, you know, if you used to watch the movies, women used to walk up to a man and slap him. And nobody said anything. Now when you say, women, you don't need to antagonize men, they're like, file, you shouldn't say that. You need to apologize. You're suspended for a week. It's like me telling people to beat their kids. You need to chastise them. You need to spank your children. It's just that easy. You do. Your children call you out of your name. Your children call you B and all that kind of stuff. That ain't funny. And so you want to say, well, I don't beat my kids because it's insensitive to them? No. The Bible says that for parents not to provoke their children to anger, but it also tells children actually to, you know, to honor their father and mother. But you just can't go off like that. That'll get you killed. And they made him apologize and then took him off the air for a week because he spoke his thoughts and women got mad. Hey, good morning, Eric.
Morning.
Your mic's not on.
Oh. Morning. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I got Daniel Halper coming on at the bottom of the hour with Clinton Inc. It's going to talk about the Clinton Empire. It's going to be a good conversation. But I am just – I saw that last night. What is up with you have to suspend people because they say the truth or they say their opinion? Can't people have an opinion opposite of yours, you not like it and say okay? Or do we have to be all politically correct and very, very sensitive to what we say? Good morning, Diva.
Good morning. I just want to say,
I know you agree with it.
No, I don't agree with his suspension. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is not the greatest, is not my most favorite person, but I do like that he's always honest. I don't think that anybody forced him to apologize. I think that after hearing from women, especially women in his family, that he reflected on back what he said in a choice of words that he used were poor. But I don't agree with him being suspended. I believe his apology was sincere.
No, we're not talking about his apology. I'm talking about his first choice of words. They were sincere, and they should not have been apologetic. He did not have to, because he says, I do not believe in men hitting and beating on women, but women should know not to antagonize their men. That's
do you
what
know
he
how
said.
That sounds coming across to
like
someone
that.
who has been in an abusive situation?
We know you have no business putting your hands on a woman. I don't know how many times I got to reiterate that. But as a man who was raised by women, see, I know what I'm going to do if somebody touches a female member of my family. I know what I'm going to do. I know what my boys are going to do. I know what I'm going to have to remind myself that I work for the worldwide leader. I'm going to have to get law enforcement officials involved because of what I'm going to be tempted to do. But what I've tried to employ the female members of my family, some of whom you all met and talked to and what have you, is that, again, and this is what I've done this all my life, let's make sure we don't do anything to provoke wrong actions. Because if I come, or somebody else come, whether it's law enforcement officials, your brother, or the fellas that you know, if we come after somebody has put their hands on you, it doesn't negate the fact that they already put their hands on you. So let's try to make sure that we can do our part in making sure that that doesn't happen. Now, you got some dudes that are just horrible, and they're going to do it anyway. And there's never an excuse to put your hands on a woman. But domestic violence or whatever the case may be, with men putting their hands on women, is obviously a very real, real issue in our society. And I think that just talking about what guys shouldn't do, we got to also make sure that you can do your part to do whatever you can do to try to make sure it doesn't happen. We know they're wrong. We know they're criminal. We know they probably deserve to be in jail. In Ray Rice's case, he probably deserves more than the 2-game suspension, which we both acknowledged. But at the same time, we also have to make sure that we learn as much as we can about elements of provocation. Not that there's real provocation, but the elements of provocation. You got to make sure that you address it, because what we've got to do is do what we can to try to prevent the situations from happening in any way. And I don't think that's broached enough.
I agree with him wholeheartedly.
So do I.
I do three.
I agree with him wholeheartedly. And not only that, we do the same thing with our sexuality when we don't. There are women who out there who tease men.
Lord have mercy.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Lord. They do some crazy stuff.
So are you saying because
we're not talking about mixed signals. I'm talking about
giving mixed signals. She deserved to be assaulted.
No, I didn't say. This is not about. Listen to what I said, Diva. I didn't say she deserved to be assaulted. But what I am saying is, you don't go to a man's house, take off your clothes, get in his bed, make him think you get ready to go somewhere, and then in the middle of where you at, decide that you'd want to go home because it's not that right. Shouldn't have been there in the first place. So you might as well call a spade a spade. You don't go somewhere playing around and then try not to get burned. So
whatever.
You think that's okay? You can be in the act of a sexual act, say no, and if he continues, it's called rape. That's real.
Will you let me finish. I've been there where I thought, well, I may not have actually gotten to the sexual, we're in the middle of the act, but gotten so far as, okay, we took all our clothes off, we're got in bed. And then I'm like, wait a minute, you know what? I'm sorry, I can't do this. I changed my mind. I don't think that would cause me to be, it's okay if he decides to say, well, no, you already naked. You already got me going. No, we're going to finish this out.
Did you miss my point? You missed what I said. You don't listen
to me. Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with him making his opinion? I mean, if you don't agree with him, that's fine. Why do you have to punish him because of it? That's what I'm sick of.
Because folks got mad because of what he said. Because
liberals don't believe in America, and they don't believe in free speech, and they don't believe in freedom of religion.
Yeah,
they don't believe in freedom of the press.
Free speech is dead.
Anyone can force Stephen A. Smith to apologize for something he believes deep down wholeheartedly. I think it's something he even said within his own family members, females that he loved, he offended, which made him reflect it on what he said. I'm sorry.
Don't be naive. It was all about him. It was all about his job.
You just don't get it.
Don't get it twisted. It was all about his job.
I watched Stephen A. Smith.
I don't care what you watch. When he came back and apologized, they made him apologize the same way they wanted that young man that you ain't heard no more from that was on ESPN who said he thought homosexuality was a sin. You ain't seen him again because he wouldn't come back and apologize for what he said.
Exactly.
Just
I don't think Stephen A. Smith would have apologized if he didn't feel in his
he would have. He would. It's called a job.
It's
going
to happen to you too.
He wasn't going to fall on his sword for Beyonce and whatever her name is, Beyonce, Jay Z, and whatever Solange.
Solange.
Something like that.
Nicki Minaj.
No, Solange. Beyonce's sister.
Beyonce's sister. Yeah.
What about his sister?
She beat up Jay Z in an elevator, and he didn't hit her back. And actually, she did. He did very, very well. He did very, very well not to get her off of him, because she was provoking him. That was a strict case. She was provoking him to hit her.
See, I'm
sorry.
That's
beyond
provoking.
Just, she actually was hitting him. Provocation is such a broad word, and I've seen women get up in men's face or just get into arguments with the men.
She spit
and
on him too, Diva.
They decide to turn around and knock her out and say, oh, she provoked me. How is words provoking you? What Solange did was beyond provocation.
Diva, sweetie,
she spit on the man too.
She spit. I mean, you have to understand. We understand. There are a lot.
I don't know what you got.
That's the same kind of bullying that a lot of, I shouldn't say this. No, wait, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. When women play this game, there are women out here that play a lot of inappropriate games.
And they do. And that's we got to be real about this. Women can do some real crazy stuff. We need to be honest about that. But we want our crazy to be validated. But when a man decides to come back, then it's, oh, my God. And don't get me wrong. I'm not on the man's side that he ought to beat women. That's not what I'm saying. But we need to take some responsibility also in the situation.
I used to go to church with a lady who claimed she was the victim and turned out to be no more just as defenseless as a porcupine.
Speaking of which, I saw a woman the other day going down the street in a truck. Her and her, guess her man, I guess it's her man. She punched the crap out of him in the face. I mean, it was, you know, it was like a, you know, you're going down the street, so she, it was, he was on the passenger side, she was on the driver's side.
She was driving.
She was driving.
Uh-huh.
And she took her right fist and punched him straight in the face. And I'm just walking the dog, and I said, ooh.
Tracy, hey, Tracy.
Huh?
What's
and he got away with it.
Tracy.
What'd you say?
I said, this is a typical liberal flash mob mentality. They all pile on to some silly little cause like this, and so they beat the man down. And it's ridiculous.
And I'm just saying, what Stephen A. Smith said was not, it was not a censor. It was his opinion.
I was real.
Hear his apology?
I've heard his apology, but it's not about the apology. He shouldn't have had to apologize.
He even said, you're saying that what he said was not offensive, but even he claims what he said was offensive, and he was sorry for it.
He was trying to protect his job, Diva.
It's a nice little six-figure check.
You got to see your face.
He's trying to protect that. He's trying to go somewhere. If he had not apologized, he would have cut his career not completely off from ESPN, but he would have cut
completely. If he'd been doing the local sports on WELA and Podunk, Iowa,
he'd be on WSOM. After me.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our crisis stabilization unit for those who need inpatient care. Turning Point Counseling Services, helping you on the road to recovery.
Concerned about your health? Confused about the amount of prescription drugs you are taking? Wondering which vitamins to take? Call Dr. Matt Mason, board-certified wellness physician as well as a chiropractor at Mason Wellness Center. Dr. Mason combines nutritional therapy, functional medicine, and chiropractic services to keep people healthy and get those of you that are ill feeling better faster. Mason Wellness Center is located on Layer Road in Warren, Ohio. To make an appointment or to receive additional info, call our office at 330-219-6450.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingley Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingley offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingley, it's not clean. Kingley Hand Wash and Wax.
Fit Family. Unique. Individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
And now, another great hit from Flo. Discounts from Progressive are good.
Why is a strike bad in baseball if it's good in bowling? And then someone told me about a basketball strike. That sounds bad, but I'm not quite sure. But I think we all can agree it's good to get discounts from Progressive.
Progressive offers lots of discounts to help you save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states.
WSOM.
I saw a guy texting yesterday, but I think he had his kids with him. Is that possible? I felt like following him. And he was not going slow. He was approaching a roundabout. I don't know what you have to set up for yourself, what sort of thing to convince yourself, but texting while you're driving is not suicidal, it's homicidal.
Catch Dennis Miller, noon to 3, weekdays, right here on News Talk AM 600. We're back with Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM. 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at TracyandFriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
Hello?
We're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And I have a gentleman on the line with me, and his name is Daniel Halper. And he is the author of Clinton, Inc. And I'm going to say this out loud. I am a Audible subscriber, so every month I get a book. And I try to – I have my work reading, and then I have my my recreational reading. And because when I walk and I'm on the treadmill and all, I'm listening to a book, or when I'm driving, I'm listening to a book. And because I'm into politics, I pick a book. Sometimes it's, you know, self-help. I've done, you know, The One Thing. I've done some great books on that. But I found this book called Clinton, Inc. And this was before I got the press release to have this gentleman on. His name, is Daniel. And I began to listen to this book, and it was very, very intensive. I was like, okay, this is good, because it was very, very honest. And so I'm glad to have him on. I'm excited about talking with him about him writing this book, because he's done the research, and I'm going to ask him to dispel some of the myths that you hear even today with Hillary Clinton's book, the publication that came out. Because as I was reading in his book, he was talking about being flat broke. She did an interview and said she was flat broke. And, you know, and I said, yeah. Flat broke. Let me show her broke is. And he actually, in his books, he has addressed this, that they did not have the resources because their money was all tied up in legal fees because the government was not paying for their legal fees. I'm going to let Daniel talk about his own book. Hi, Daniel. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. I've got Sticks and Eric, who we call the professor in studio with me, and Lloyd, who we call Sticks in the studio with me. And I want to... thank you for accepting my invitation to come and hang out with us. Tell us about Clinton, Inc. I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you talk about listening to the Audible version. I have to say, when I heard that version, I thought it was excellent. And not because I wrote it, but because the voice is really good. And it's not mine. It's much better than mine. And he does, like, Bill Clinton's voice, and he's actually pretty good. I was surprised at how happy I was with the audio version of the book. So I'd recommend listening to it rather, you know, reading it works too, obviously. I don't want to discourage readers, but listening to it is great. So thanks for that.
What made tell me a little bit. What have you written before, and what made you write about the Clintons? How did you get to this point?
So the Clintons are the best at politics, right? We know this because, well, Bill Clinton was president for 8 years, and Hillary Clinton might be president in the future. Bill Clinton and Hillary are just phenomenal political couple, and they are a fascinating story. My book, as you say, it tracks from the impeachment and the scandals, which I call the low point of the Clintons' entry into political life, to where they are today, which is, again, another high, getting ready to possibly return to the White House in 2016. I do, as Hillary Clinton has detailed, I do detail that the Clintons were, in fact, broke when they were leaving the White House, but I also detail that it was very easy for them to make back a lot of that money and to make a lot of money very quickly, and they've done so at remarkable speeds and with remarkable success. They were broke, as you said, because they owed $12 million in legal fees for all these scandals, for all these impeachments. So the scandals not only took a political cost, but a monetary cost. And I talk about Clinton Inc. as a corporation, and the goal of Clinton Inc. as a corporation is not just monetary success, which it is, but it's also political success. So it's coming back from that low, from not just being politically broke, but also financially broke, to the riches that they enjoy today. And it's really a remarkable story. I talk about how when they leave the White House, Bill Clinton is personally depressed. He believes that, you know, the best 8 years are behind him, and what is he going to do anyway? He's a 54-year-old man. He's got many decades ahead of him, but he's sort of achieved the greatest political success he'll ever be able to achieve. And so he tries to rebuild his reputation, and he does so by reaching out to a lot of Republicans. He gives Newt Gingrich late-night phone calls and talks to him about, you know, various politics. He talks to even Ken Starr. I quote Ken Starr in the book,
yes,
is now calling Bill Clinton lovable, you know, because Ken Starr was asked, how does this guy come back?
How does that happen?
He's so lovable. And, yeah, it's really an amazing sort of achievement on Bill Clinton's part. I think it shows his understanding of humans. And it's simple. Politics is humans. You know, we sort of have this political system in place to help us live our lives. And so Bill Clinton understands the human level of it, and he understands that if you reach out to your enemies and you say nice things to them and you're just generally pleasant to them, they'll be nice back. And even Republicans, even Democrats, doesn't matter. People are people, and they like being flattered. And Bill Clinton can flatter anyone,
well.
And he can
mm-hmm.
charm just about anybody. And he
Tell
does so
this.
With the Bush family. He ingratiates
yes,
himself in with the Bush family.
Tell me
so
this.
It's really,
you talk
it's
about the
really understanding of politics. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You talk
sorry,
about the temperament,
ahead.
Their personalities, the Hillary personality and the Bill personality. And the temperament of them, because Bill is a beast when it comes to charisma. Just don't cross him.
Right. Bill just exudes charisma. He is gregarious, and when you meet him, everybody who can think, he looks at you in the eyes, he makes eye contact with you, and for that second or minute or however long you're engaged in a conversation with him, you think that you're the most important person in the world. And he was once the most important man in the world as the leader of the free world, and he's looking at you directly in the eyes, and you think that you're the most important person in the world. And that's a real gift. That's a real charm. Hillary Clinton, as a politician, she doesn't quite have that ability. She doesn't quite, you know, she's a bit of a celebrity, so when she shows up, people are sort of awed by her just showing up. But she isn't able to sort of lock people in and make them feel really good about themselves the way Bill Clinton is. But people who know them, weirdly enough, and I discovered this in reporting the book, people who know them say that actually the opposite is closer to being the true selves. So Hillary Clinton actually has a lot of dear friends that she's had for decades. She tends to be considered a lot more likable by people who know them. And Bill Clinton, well, he's considered a little more cold and a little more calculating and sometimes more cunning than Hillary Clinton. So it really shows that when you get to know people, no matter how well you think that you know them through the press or through the various TV appearances or whatnot, when you get to know people, they somehow are different than their public caricature. And so it's a real insight, I think, into who they are as people and sort of how they are able to work alongside each other.
Do you think that the Republicans will go back to the Hillary Clinton that they knew as a senator, or will they go back to the Hillary Clinton that they know as the Secretary of State? Because she was two different people.
Look, that's a tough question. I mean, as a senator, Hillary Clinton, just like as Bill Clinton was trying to repair relationships with Republicans, as a senator, she tried to repair and successfully repaired relationships with a lot of senators. I mean, from Lindsey Graham and John McCain, these people helped lead impeachment. These were not friends of the Clintons before, but they are nice to the Clintons now, and they only, you know, speak warmly of the Clintons and of especially of Hillary. But, you know, politics is about, it's not just about helping people, but for political parties, it's about winning elections, right? So, I mean, I think Republicans are conflicted because on the one hand, they have warm feelings to the Clintons, but on the other hand, many of them want to win an election. So I don't really know how they're going to be. Already some of their sharpest critics have been softened, no doubt. I talked to Texas Senator Phil Graham, a sharp critic of Bill Clinton. He had only nice things to say about Bill Clinton. But, you know, you can see it with Benghazi, and you can see it with various other what critics call mishaps. And you can see that it's these warm feelings only go so far. And to win an election, it perhaps might not be enough. You know, it's not a sure bet that she'll be able to win the next election. But it's certainly they've positioned themselves quite well.
Let me ask you about crossing the Clintons. You know, they don't forgive
a lot
of people, especially when it comes to journalists. I mean, and inside of the book, you talk about how when people come after him and go after his brand, and if he doesn't like it, if he can't spin out of it, getting back in his good graces is not always the easiest thing to do. Or if he feels as though he's been hurt by you.
That's correct. He can charm anybody he wants to charm, but if he feels like you should have been loyal to him and you're not, he will seek retribution. They will both seek retribution. I mean, there are countless examples that I cite in the book. One of them is George Stephanopoulos, for instance, the famous ABC Good Morning America host. He used to be the communications director for Bill Clinton in the White House, and he wrote a really interesting memoir about his time in the White House. But at times it was unflattering. He talked about the bimbo eruptions. He talked about Clinton as being sort of manager and very hard to work for at times. And that embarrassed Bill Clinton. It didn't make him look good. He's a guy who obviously cares about his reputation. And he felt like he had given Stephanopoulos this chance. He had given Stephanopoulos this opportunity to do well in life, which he has done well in life thanks to the opportunities that he's gotten. But he didn't feel like he was repaid in kind. And so Stephanopoulos, you know, I tell the story of he's sitting around with a bunch of people from Bon Jovi to the governor of Maryland at the time to some Republicans. And he goes and launches into this story about how Stephanopoulos, when he learned about Jennifer Flowers, starts crying like a little baby. And the story is only meant to embarrass Stephanopoulos, but I think it shows, as you suggest, that you don't want to cross the Clintons because they'll seek retribution and they'll hold it against you for a long, long time. I mean, there are signs now that the relationship between Stephanopoulos and the Clintons is warming a little bit, but nevertheless, you know, that's taken a decade and a half to begin to warm, you know, so you don't want to cross them. Otherwise, you do so at your own risk.
You think Chelsea has it to carry on the empire? You think she's going that direction, she and her husband? Because they want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, yeah, certainly Chelsea does. I have a little less insight into her husband, but, you know, Chelsea decided sometime, when Chelsea leaves the White House, she goes as far away as she can to college. She goes to Stanford on the other side of the coast. Then she goes to London she goes to England to study there. Then she finally finds herself back in New York where her mother's living, and her mother's the senator, and her mother's now getting ready to run for president in 2008. And Chelsea realizes that, you know, she'll always be a Clinton, and she might as well join the family business. So she joins the family business, And automatically, just like any other family business, when a family member joins, they automatically outrank even the most loyal aides, even the most senior people who have been there for a long time. And so Chelsea, she automatically sort of propels to the top of the Clinton empire, if you will. And she starts unsettling things, and things become a little uneven because you're not, you now have a third boss that you have to worry about. And you have, you know, so it sort of unsettles things to the point where people, aides who like the Clintons and who want Hillary to win, are now concerned that Chelsea's involvement is so heavy-handed, and it's so, she's so involved that they're concerned that, since they think she's not quite sure that she knows what she's doing, since she's young and she doesn't have the experience to run a political campaign, they're concerned that it could hurt Hillary Clinton's chances to win the next election, that her own chances could be hurt most by the people who are around her, not Republicans, you know, not the people who have once hated her. So I think that's an interesting turn in Clinton Inc. and in the book itself.
Hey, I'm talking with Daniel Helfer, and he has written a book called Clinton Inc. And it, you know, so to be perfectly honest, I am a conservative, and the book is very intriguing. It's very, very open and honest about the Clinton brand, the business of the Clinton empire. And I would recommend anyone who's interested in politics, whether it be conservative and or liberal, you go out and pick it up. And it's a very good read. I'm doing it on Audible as I'm, you know, doing my chores. And Audible works for me, but whatever works for you, if you're a reader, then read it. But it's a great book. It really digs into the political system. And if you are a political hack like I am, I found that you can learn something from the business of the Clintons. You can learn anything from a business. But the Clintons are a political business, more so than any other political family in this time. Would you say that, Daniel?
Absolutely, and they're the best at it. That's why, I mean, the book, you're right. You're right to say that the book is basically an insight into politics at its best, that it's a look into how politics doesn't work today. But it uses the people who are the best at it, whether you're Republican or Democrat. I mean, that doesn't really matter. But it looks at them, and it looks at how they came from such a low to such a high, some of the backroom deals that they had to make, some of the associations they had to make, and some of the, you know, some of the people that felt betrayed. And I think it would be helpful to understanding American politics, how it is today.
Because when you talked about the mindset that Hillary Clinton had during the Lewinsky scandal, and she was more upset not about his cheating, because that was not the first time he had done that, but that he got caught and he may ruin the brand or her chances, because they are a partnership, they are a team. That was just amazing to me, because I had always thought that.
Yeah, no, this is what I learned. And in a way, the weird thing about the Lewinsky scandal is it in a way liberated Hillary Clinton, because she had felt betrayed by her husband, in that, you know, she felt like he had hurt her future political chances. She just said, okay, forget him. I'm going to move to New York. Which is a great state to run as a Democrat from, because it's a very wealthy Democratic state. It's easy for a Democrat to get elected and reelected, because it's a reliably blue state. And she says, forget him. I'm going to New York, and I'm gonna, you know, do this for myself, because I've got to watch out for myself. He's not watching out for me. And so in a way, it liberates her. It not just liberates her, but it also helps in a weird way, in a way that nobody ever would have guessed, it helps her rehabilitate her own reputation. Because as people, as Americans see her with her husband, they begin to feel sorry for her. And being the victim, Hillary Clinton learns, is very, very good for her poll numbers. That victimhood is good for Hillary Clinton's poll numbers, and her likability begins to rise. She does well in New York. She's able to secure the Democratic nomination, and eventually she's able to win the Republican nomination. Win the general election in New York. One story I tell in the book is a story of how Rick Lazio, her Democratic opponent, I mean her Republican opponent, sorry, I'm not speaking straight this morning, Rick Lazio, her Republican opponent, is on the sly. He doesn't want Hillary to become the he obviously doesn't want Hillary to win. He's obviously battling her. And on the sly, he's receiving advice from Chuck Schumer, the Democratic senator from New York, who apparently doesn't want Hillary to win either because he's concerned that he's going to look small by comparison to his senator, Hillary Clinton, because she has such a star power and she's so famous and she's such a celebrity that if she comes into his state, it doesn't matter that he'll be the senior New York Democratic senator. What matters is that he'll have less say, and he'll be only the second famous New York senator. So he wants her to lose, which is, and he's advising Rick Lazio throughout the campaign, which is, I think, an interesting turn.
Yes, it is. Tell me, President Obama and Secretary of State, former Senator Hillary Clinton, you know, that junior senator actually took the wind out of her sail. I don't think she was expecting that, and I don't think anyone else was either. She wasn't not expecting that primary to go the way it did. You know, President Obama, the campaign skills that he had in the primary, as well as in the general, it made people's heads spin. No one was prepared for the machine that came out of the Obama campaign.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that and how?
Well, like
you saw her. Saw her. She was just, there's no way this little kid is going to beat her. He was a rookie.
Well, you know, as I say, when they leave the White House, they work to repair relationships with Republicans because Republicans have impeached them and they know that they have a big problem with Republicans. They're right that they have a problem with Republicans, but what they don't realize is that a lot of Democrats are very disappointed in them as well. What they don't realize is that Democrats feel like Bill Clinton himself could have been a transformational president. He could have been what Republicans had in Ronald Reagan. Bill Clinton could have been that to the Democratic Party. At least that's what his fans hoped for. Instead, he gets caught in the Oval Office with his pants off. Instead, he screws around with the intern. Instead, there's all these scandals. There's impeachment. It's a nonstop embarrassment, and it paves the way for 8 years of George W. Bush in Democratic eyes. And so by the 2008 campaign, you know, the Clintons think that they're ready because they've repaired all these relationships with Republicans, but they don't realize that they didn't do anything to repair any relationships with Democrats, and they had massive problems with Democrats, and so they lose, and Democrats choose the guy they don't know, Barack Obama, over the person they do know, Hillary Clinton. So it's a massive insult. It's a slap in the face to Hillary Clinton. And consequently, it causes her to decide to go into the State Department. It causes her to decide that I need to go and become, you know, I need to be loyal to the Democratic Party if I ever want to be successful again, because they'll take it out against me if I'm not. And so that's one of the reasons she goes into the Obama administration, is so she can play loyal Democrat for a few years, which she does to decent success. And now Democrats are, for the most part, rallying around her.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. I mean, she has done a, you know, she's done a good PR spin on all of it. I mean, everything that's thrown at him, it never sticks. And that's amazing, especially when it comes to the Clintons. It just doesn't stick long.
Yeah.
I mean, it knocks them for a loop. It knocks them down, and they're like weevils wobble, but they don't fall down. They keep on coming back.
They don't fall down. They never slink away from the national stage. They always fight back. They dig in. They fight back, and they are, you know, if you want to be successful in American politics, I think you need to understand the Clintons and their success in American politics to understand that. I mean, I think that's why it's such a compelling story, is because they're so good. They've been around for so long, and they're not going anywhere. They're home. They want to be around for a lot longer, it would appear.
You guys have any questions?
Are the Clintons trying to recreate the Kennedy dynasty?
I don't know. You know, I think some of them probably have that in mind, but there's also a lot of conflict within Clinton world and within Clinton Inc. You know, a lot of people assume that Bill Clinton, everybody assumed up until this point, I think, that Bill Clinton wants to return to the White House. Aides that I spoke to say, no, he doesn't. This guy this guy has a fantastic life as it is. He's on a private jet nonstop. He's away from home 320 nights a year. He lives from hotel to hotel. You know, it's a weird lifestyle, but it's one that he really likes and gives him a certain liberty. Going back to the White House, being the first dude, as he would be, or the first mate or whatever you want to call him.
That would be hard for him.
It's not something that appeals to him. It's not something that he wants.
But wouldn't it really be hard for any man?
I don't think any man, but I think it would be hard for him for who he is.
I don't see it being all that hard for
Barack. Yeah, look, he's a classic narcissist.
Go ahead.
He's a classic narcissist. This is a man who wants to be on the political stage. He wants people to look at him, not necessarily the person next to him, even if that's his wife.
That's true. Go ahead, Eric.
Mr. Helper, I have to plead ignorance here. I'm not familiar with your book yet, but I'm going to rectify that very quickly here. You sound like a fascinating man. How are you this morning, by the way? Well, my question, Mr. Helper, is this. Do you think that those of us who are really in touch with economics at the molecular level will ever forgive the Clinton dynasty for Clinton's signing of the Commodity Future Modernization Act, which repealed Glass-Steagall?
Look, I don't know. You're the one I should ask since you're so concerned. Will you ever forgive Bill Clinton for signing the repeal of Glass-Steagall?
For that and NAFTA, those are two cardinal sins.
I don't think that's even on the radar now. Clinton, he doesn't have to run again. That's my opinion. He doesn't have to run again. And Bill and Hillary can always say that was under Bill's administration. I was just the first lady. And so they're totally separate from it. That's not something that they really have to go and deal with one-on-one.
If Hillary would pull that off, that would jettison
them. She's already done that. You remember, she's already done that.
No. I mean, if she were to...
She's already done that. She's done that because she is now the forerunner for the Democrat in 2016. And you have not, you might hear another opponent. You keep on hearing a couple names if she doesn't run. But if she runs... Who on the Democrat side can beat her in a primary right now?
What about Glass-Steagall?
No, you missed the point.
No.
Who can beat her? This is not about the past.
Elizabeth Warren.
Huh? She can't beat her.
I think she can.
I don't think she can.
I think she can.
Who do you think can beat Hillary?
Do you think Elizabeth Warren can take out Hillary? I don't think they'll both run.
I think the lesson from 2008 is that these people can be beaten. Though they're so good, they can still be beaten. You know, Barack Obama could still exist. He could still, another Barack Obama, or, if that's Liz Warren, if that's Martin O'Malley, we're not sure yet until they hit the campaign trail and we see if they're any good at that campaigning. It's a hard skill. And so I'm not sure yet. To your question about Glass-Steagall, I don't know about that one in particular, but my sense after covering the Clintons for a while is that the Clintons aren't particularly ideological. So why does Bill Clinton sign NAFTA? Mainly because that's what most people want, or he can reach across the aisle with Republicans. He can do these sorts of things with Republicans, and because he's not a very ideological person, that's not what drives him. What drives these people is power, politics, money, those sorts of things. The actual policy, I think they could take it or leave it. So if everybody wants Glass-Steagall back, I'm sure Hillary would be fine with it. She sort of sticks her finger in the wind and figures out what people want to hear and what people want to talk about. And, she's a standard liberal, but she's not a particular ideologue, I don't think.
She's a politician.
They're foremost politicians.
They're politicians. They do what's expedient for the time that they're in. Not always. And I think that's just who they are. You saw Bill transform from one Congress to another. It was almost like two different presidents. And seamlessly did it. Do you think that I'm thinking that Hillary may not run? Do you have that kind of sense that she may not run? I'm thinking she may not run.
I think she has big problems. I mean, I think she has she has to figure out what to do with Bill, because though he's her biggest asset, he's also her biggest liability. She has to solve the Chelsea problem, this emerging force who's very ambitious and might not know what's best for her mother. So she has to deal with all these problems. I think if she doesn't run, it's because she realizes that she might not win, and she also realizes that being a two-time loser would be worse than not running at all. Look, if she'd stopped running now, people would be nice to her. Republicans would again soften to her, and her legacy would be sort of secure. If she runs, she's throwing it all up in the air again, and what might come about from it might be a lot worse. So I think she has to make a political calculation based on various things that we don't know. For instance, her health. You know, they're always coy when somebody talks about their health, but the truth is that when I was reporting this book and I would ask aides why Hillary might not run, her health was one of the issues, was the number one issue they'd always bring up, because they understand that she's getting up there in years and that she's had some health problems, and that the severity of them might be such that, you know, it could prevent her from running, or at least being able to run at full speed. So I'm not sure what the answers to those questions are, mainly because her health records aren't public information. They're private. They're protected just like yours and mine are. But she knows the answer. And so, you know, I think she at some point will have to make a political calculation. But also make no mistake, I mean, the last 20 years basically have all been leading up to a presidential run. You know, everything they've done has in some ways led up to this moment. So, you know, part of me thinks there's no way she can't run. She can't not run, because everything in her life is leading up to this moment, and to just give it all up seems so out of character, and seems a little bit crazy even.
Is Bill's health to where he can be an effective helpmate during a campaign? I've heard that his health is questionable at this point.
A lot of people wonder whether he's sort of a step slower, whether he's not quite as strong as he once was. We don't really have much insight into it, but I think the greatest insight comes, again, from Bill Clinton himself. He talks about, privately, he talks about having only a few years left to live. Now, I guess he's sort of a morbid man and sort of looks at, you know, but people say, you know, he'll say things like, look, I only have 5 years left to live. Or publicly, he has said things such as, Hillary Clinton will live many, many years, you know, past me. Her health is fine. Mine, on the other hand. So we don't really know. We know that he's taken serious measures. He had a serious heart problem in around 2004, 2005. He's taken a series of measures to try to help his heart. He eats a lot healthier. Sometimes he claims he's a vegan. He's not fully a vegan, but he sometimes is, you know. But regardless, we know that he's eating a little healthier. He's a lot skinnier, but he also, it does, you know, he's got a full head of gray hair. He's aged. You can see it in his face. He has,
absolutely,
you know, he's not a young man anymore.
Yeah, he looks a bit haggard to me.
I mean, I'm not seeing a man, too many men come out of the White House. And see, my concern is, I don't think Hillary wants to crack. And when I say that, women age differently than men. When you look at a man, if you look at the aging of Barack Obama as he has gone through this 6 years in the White House, can you imagine what will happen to a 71-year-old woman?
See, and that's something that many of the political pundits have said about the American people in general, is we won't elect a woman because we don't want to see her age in the White House.
We don't think that far in advance. They say it, they say it, but I'm saying in her mind, when she looks, women, we're critical as it is. We're wacky as it is. I said that earlier. We're dingy. We look in the mirror now and we get a crack and we don't even have them. We start complaining. You know, she did a whole lot of Botox in 2008. She is going to have a hard time being a female president under just the pressure of the office, let alone anything else. Diva, did you have anything that you wanted to ask?
No, because y'all's opinions of the Clintons really don't matter to me, so no, thank you.
Jeez,
no.
Old man, Diva. That's my liberal. That's my liberal person.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Daniel, I want to thank you for your time. I'm, as you can tell, I'm really enjoying your book. I really am.
Well, it's been wonderful. Thanks for having me.
It is a great read. Sure, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah. Now, I turned 18 in 90,
So in 92, that was the first presidential election I was able to vote in when he ran against Bush 41. And would you say that the fact that he was able to rally the young people around him was one of his monumental things he did by going to shows, channels like MTV, VH1, and sitting down and having forums?
Yeah, absolutely. That they've transformed the way campaigns operate. I mean, you know, the fact that Obama would go on Jimmy Kimmel Live, that's all because of things that the Clintons did, you know, pulling out a saxophone on late night TV. Like, you know, in a way, they understood before everybody else that media's changed, that people don't just watch the nightly news and the Today Show, that they watch other things, and that you, in order to reach other people, you need to go to those mediums. So Bill Clinton really transformed that. We'll see if Hillary's able to connect with people in the way that he was able to do so, so transformationally.
I have one more question for you. Bill Clinton and the African-American community. Now, we thought, people really thought, I think Hillary, most people stayed on the Hillary side until Barack Obama came in and they saw that he had a viable chance. And then all did not swing instantaneously. Will they keep that? How are they dealing with that now? Are they just, because it was severed during the campaign. They weren't as endeared as it
right.
was at one time. Because, you know, Bill was the first black president.
Well, I tell this story, and he made those racially insensitive comments in the 2008 campaign.
Right.
One of the phone calls he gets that night is from George W. Bush, who calls him to say, you know, oh, you know, I know you're not a racist, and it's nights like these when nobody wants to be your friend that real friends call, and that's why I'm calling you today. In the last couple of years, they have reached out to, I mean, everything from like James Clyburn, the Democratic politician, to, you know, historically black sororities, to they've made comments on Trayvon Martin case. They have made a systematic effort to try to ingratiate themselves into various African-American communities, knowing that they had this problem. I don't know whether they fully solved it, but those are signs that they have realized that they have this problem.
Okay. So they do understand, because, I mean, at one time, they were the black president.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know
right.
how, and when during those racial comments that Bill made, I personally thought some of it was intentional because he knows better. I've never seen him slip like that. I mean, I've watched him in his career as an adult, and when I look at him, I never saw him slip up verbally like that. He's always been in the command of his tongue.
Some of his age was intentional, too. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it looked like it was intentional because he was trying to help Hillary.
You know, because he was trying to hurt Hillary because he might not want to go back to the White House.
Right,
yeah.
And that's what I was thinking.
It's a complicated relationship there.
Yeah, because you know, if he goes back to the White House, he's going to be on lockdown again, and I don't think he likes lockdown. He likes hotel living. I'm not being rude. I'm just saying that's his lifestyle. He's enjoying it. They have a relationship. They have an understanding, whatever that understanding may be. And when he goes back in the White House, you know, it's like when you sit up in a pulpit.
He's gonna have to be.
You can't
himself.
Pick your nose while you're in a pulpit.
He'll have to behave himself again.
Absolutely. And I don't think he wants to go back and start behaving again.
I don't think he knows how. Well,
he knows how. He just don't like that. That's not who he is. And at one time before we had all this media, presidents could do what they choose and no one knew. Now there's so much exposure. We have a hard time going to Starbucks and not getting caught by cameras, let alone being the president of the United States of
yeah.
America or the first male. We've never had a first man.
Yeah.
He'll be under a microscope. I don't think he wants that.
No.
But that's just a side
We don't even know what we're going to call him yet. First husband, first dude, first.
It'll be something.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I don't think he wants it. That's a microscope. I don't think he wants it. He likes hotel living. And he likes walking around with Secret Service and shaking hands and no one scrutinizing how he's living his life. Daniel, again, I want to thank you. It is called Clinton, Inc. You can find it anywhere books are sold. Go out, pick it up. Go get it on Barnes & Noble, Kindle. You can find e-books. They've got it at Google Books. Anywhere you can find this book, I would recommend both conservative as well as liberal. Go out and pick up the book. It's very, very factual. You don't know what side of the fence this guy is on. So I don't know if you're a liberal or a conservative. I just know that you told a lot of truth. Daniel, thanks.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks so much for the for having me on.
You're welcome, and you're welcome to come back anytime.
Would love to. Thank you.
Thank you. Any closing comments?
You've really given a new dimension to the Clintons. I hadn't given them the kind of that kind of in-depth thought in years, and I'm looking forward to...
Not you, Eric. I'm asking Daniel. I got to hang up on him.
Oh, sorry.
Daniel, we have any closing comments?
He's gone.
He's gone. I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of our break.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce, the full cup of love.
Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a cup of love.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
Welcome to Tracy and Friends, weekdays from 9 to noon. The show that stimulates your mind on the issues of the day. Call the show at 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, we're back, and you listen to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I want to thank Daniel Halpern, and he is the author of Clinton, Inc., for coming on with us and spending some time. It's a fascinating book, and for those of you who are readers and or into politics, it's a good book.
Well, I mean, not even that. I've seen some editorials about it, and even the liberals say it's a very well-researched, very even-handed book.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's a very factual book. It's not a hit piece on the Clintons at all.
Just like I said, I don't know if he's conservative or liberal. I just know, you know, like he said about the Clintons talking about them being flat broke.
Yeah.
You know, he comes back in there and he said, yeah, they walked out with $12 million in debt. Now, $12 million in debt, and you can't have a book deal until you cross that threshold. But it was very fascinating to go out and start making some money to get that debt down, and yes, because of their names, they could go sign their name on a line, and they could get a credit line, where we couldn't.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they were not.
Well, I mean,
$1 million in debt.
What was he getting? What was he getting? $1 million a speech or something?
$250,000.
Okay. So you know, it don't take too long, too many speeches to.
No, and then he went over to China.
To break.
He went over to China. I think he got a $2 million speech deal for doing something overseas one day. Hey, Eric, what did you think?
Yeah, that was pretty good. I like that interview.
It was a pretty even hand. I think that we need to look at both sides of the fence because they are an empire. They are a political empire that we're not paying attention to. Whether you like them and or love them, you've got to give them due for what they've done and what they're doing.
Well, I agree with the point about Bill. I really don't think he wants to go back to Washington. I think he's happy doing what he's doing.
No.
Come on, man. Do you really want to go back in that bubble? That's a microscope.
If you take this book with the stuff that's in Ed Klein's book,
yeah.
I don't think, no. I think Bill's having too much fun to go back to D.C.
Why would he want to do that? Think about it. Do you know how much scrutiny and how much of a microscope? It's like I call it a fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be under a fishbowl microscope for 4 to 8 years.
Yep. Yeah,
He likes living in a hotel.
With no cameras.
That's what I'm trying to say. He goes where he goes. He stays where he goes. No one pays attention to where he goes, and he's happy what he's doing. And you want to take him, put him back in the White House, and then put the first gentleman
is what
Bill
sent me. He said the best one he's heard is first gentleman.
Okay, you want to see what the first gentleman is? Because remember, the first gentleman.
He ain't a gentleman, though.
He's got a schedule.
Yeah,
and
you got
a longer schedule.
And now he's going to have to come up with some kind of a PR. A cause to put in PR.
Yeah, every first lady has a cause. They have to do, you know, like Michelle with the get off the couch thing. He'll have to do something like that. He don't want to do that.
He's not going to be picking out. I don't see him picking out silverware and China.
Drapes
and tablecloths. I just don't see it.
Does he still get to stand? Does he still get to put the first lady on his right arm when they enter the room?
I don't know how it works. No, I don't know. I don't know how.
We have to go back and look at Margaret Thatcher for the protocol. I guess that would be the closest thing I can.
But
think
you,
of.
You didn't see him too often. And see, Bill's not invisible. This is America.
And from what I understand, see, from the people that I know in England, Bill Clinton is a whole lot different than Margaret Thatcher's husband. Because Margaret Thatcher's husband was just one of the guys. He played poker and smoked cigars with the security detail.
But it's still not America. It's totally different.
That's true.
We are in love with Bill Clinton. Not only was he the president, now he'll be first gentleman. Do you know what? That will drive the media frenzy crazy.
Well,
he'll be like, what's her name?
Poker Night wouldn't go over very
the
well.
The lady that died.
In the media.
What lady that died?
Princess died.
Oh.
I'm serious. He will be like Princess. They will follow him to the bathroom because they know they're going to have a Lewinsky somewhere.
See, I don't think. Unless Hillary takes voice lessons, I don't see her getting elected president. She sounds like everybody's
ex-wife. That's because you don't like her voice. People aren't looking at her voice.
Oh, she can change her voice.
But every man in this country that's divorced is going to hear that voice and say, that's my ex-wife.
That's the least of our issues. The question is, can Republicans put somebody up there that is going to be formidable and be able to beat the machine? Because they have, again, they have been working on the machine and they have never stopped. And just like he said, her going back into the White House as Secretary of State was to cover the bridges that were breached in the last 8 years in the Democrat Party. So now she's the darling again.
A lot of the conservatives I know really have their eye on Alan West and Ben Carson.
I'm telling you now, Ben Carson cannot be president. He doesn't have the political experience.
HHS.
They need to quit that.
HHS.
Who's HHS?
I want to see him in charge of the Health and Human Services.
That's fine. He can be something else. Ben Carson, he is an intellect. I think he's a great guy. I love how he thinks. He can't be president. He doesn't have the political knowledge. If you don't know how to make a bill and play politics, we'd have another Barack Obama who was conservative.
Yeah, with this Obamacare mess, though, you would need a guy like Ben Carson to fix it.
You couldn't fix that. You can put him in Health and Human Services.
He can fix it at Health and Human Services.
You can put him somewhere else, but you definitely cannot put him in the Oval Office with all of the issues that go on politically. He'll never get a bill passed in Congress. It's too political. You got to understand, a whip is not a whip. And you got to know how to talk to the whip on both sides.
Then again, as much as I love Alan West, he may come across as a bit too morally intransigent.
Alan West can't win in a general election. He can't win in a general.
You think he's unwinnable because of that?
No, he can't win in a general election. He just doesn't have it. He doesn't have it.
He doesn't have the
he doesn't have the backing.
Charisma.
He doesn't have the charisma. He doesn't have the backing. And you can't handle the truth. People are not looking for truth. They're looking for warm fuzzies. Remember, President Obama won on warm, fuzzy, hope and change, no platform. Alan West cannot win. He does not, and I like him. He's been on with me. I consider him a colleague and a friend. He cannot win the presidency. He can't win. He can't win a general election, especially if against Hillary.
He'd be a great cabinet member, though. He'd be a great cabinet member.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's some places to put him, and great advisor. There's places for them in the cabinet, but they can't be the head all. We need someone who's going to be able to take the elements of what we believe as Americans, take conservative ideas and small government, and become a centrist again.
Yeah, it's just regrettable that men of prolific brilliance and implacable ideals and morality, those qualities themselves cannot win you an election. It's just unfortunate.
It can win you an election and get you killed, because if you don't understand how the speaker becomes the Speaker of the House, you really don't understand the nuances of what makes that happen. How does Boehner become Speaker of the House? We know that people vote on him. Big deal. How does it happen? And how does he get so much power? How does Nancy Pelosi get Speaker and stay Speaker?
Mm.
So if you don't understand what that is and what the fear is of her when she gets there, then you don't need to be in the White House. Good morning, 440. Your mic is on.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I got cut off from you the other day. I got I went into a bad area, and that was it. I was in the middle of a diatribe. But I honestly can't believe that Hillary, that we're going to elect Hillary. Why would you want to have a postmenopausal cranky old lady? No, I'm serious. I don't want that. I don't want
now,
that
listen,
person as.
Listen.
I don't want that person. And I don't care what color they are. I don't want no old cranky sucker in the White House trying to run this country. No. And then Bill, he's gonna love doing all that. He'll have tea parties, and he'll be hitting on half them gals.
Did you
he'll
see?
Be bed, he'll be betting
440, honey.
What?
Darling.
What?
Did you see what Stephen A. Smith had to apologize?
Let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you this, and I mean this. If it was his white partner across from him doing the same thing, would you guys been as upset? And I'll also
I wasn't upset.
Ask this.
I wasn't upset. What are you talking about? You're asking the wrong question about being
it
upset.
It wouldn't have been a non-issue this morning, I think.
No,
but you know what?
If he had been a white male, you might be right about that. I never brought the race into it. I thought he never had to. He should not have had to.
But aside from that, Stephen A. Smith was dumb in this regard. He knows who his bosses are, just like we know who our bosses are. You don't say anything, no matter what the setting, to tee them off. That he was dumb to do that.
I don't think he understood.
No matter
if
he's right
he
or wrong.
He had a lot of cushion in it.
If you are in CNN, you Fox, whatever, if you go against what they believe in, they're gonna make an example out of you.
Again,
Stephen A. Smith, he knows the way his bosses are, and that was a dumb move.
And that's the thing, though, Tracy. I wish ESPN would stick to sports, not politics. That's what angers me about this whole idea of them thinking they can decide what's politically correct and what's not politically incorrect. You know,
Well, what? Then Eric, he did, because remember, it all came out of a player being suspended for, I guess, hitting on a girlfriend or hitting on a wife. All the, it just came out of a sports issue that had to happen to have political ramifications because of, you know, because remember, we now have social issues inside of our sports. Remember, Tony Dungy is trying, they're trying to get him to apologize for saying that he wouldn't want to have a gay, you know, so our social issues now have blended.
And all he really said, Tracy, was that it would cause a distraction, and it would.
But he can't say you can't handle the truth.
But you have to understand, no matter if he's telling the truth or not, they could fire him if they want.
True.
They can do whatever they want. It's like any other company. It's like ESPN. They could fire him if they want. It's like any other company. They can fire you. If they don't like something you're doing, they can fire you. And that's it. Game's out.
So
no matter
what does that
tell you? Right or wrong, no matter what it is. So Stephen A. Smith was pretty dumb doing that. He knows the way his bosses are, and he.
I don't think he got it. Hey, listen, I got to take a break. I'll be right back, and when I come back, I'm going to talk to
Kevin Fern from Crazy Diamond Performance in Michigan.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of our break.
Fit family, unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you, with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for, with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
I'm Lou Valeris with your headline news. The U.S. attorney is asking a federal judge to sentence the former owner of a Youngstown oil field service company to 3 years in prison for ordering two former employees to discharge brine and oil field waste into a tributary of the Mahoning River. Prosecutors say that when Lupo owned Hard Rock Excavating, he instructed two employees to discharge brine and oil field waste into the sewer on Salt Springs Road. The waste ultimately made its way into the tributary of the Mahoning River, which led to a massive cleanup effort. It's not a whole lot in Summitville. The only business is the office of Summitville Tile, and well, there's a post office. And that's about it. With about a total of 135 people living in the limits, there isn't enough tax base to keep the village out of debt. That's why Mayor Robert Mara said dissolving the village may be their only option. The issue would have to go on a ballot to be voted on, and the earliest that could happen is in May. If voters say yes, Summitville would be dissolved into Franklin Township. For WSOM News, I'm Julio Flores.
We're back with Tracy and Friends on News Talk 600 WSOM. 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at TracyandFriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And I have a guest on, and his name is Kevin Fern. And Kevin Fern is out of Michigan, and we're going to be talking about Crazy Diamond, you said?
Crazy Diamond Performance is the name of the company.
It's called, that's all to do with compressed natural gas.
Yes, they
tell
are.
Tell us what's going on
well,
here.
They're going to they're going to take cruises that are built here in Lordstown, and they're going to retrofit them for dedicated natural gas, compressed natural gas. Are you there, Kevin?
I'm here.
Yeah.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm well. How's your weather doing up there?
It's a little cloudy, a little bit chilly. I think we've got some rain coming in tonight, so we'll just kind of see how that goes. It's a seems like fall's already here, to be honest with you. So,
yes, it does, doesn't it? We've been waking up with fall mornings for the last couple days. It's not been cute. I'm ready for hot weather again.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to complain because it could be negative 10, you know.
No more polar vortex. None of that. No more.
Yeah, exactly.
None of that. Tell us a little about your company and the retrofitting of what you're doing. Tell us what you're doing there and what's it about.
Well, I formed Crazy Diamond Performance in 2012 to develop a core natural gas vehicle enabling technologies. And what we're looking at doing is, you know, with the Chevy Cruze, is we have an aftermarket system that we've designed to retrofit that from gasoline over to compressed natural gas, which is a very abundant, clean, you know, resources we've got here in the country. So, and so we're trying to develop these technologies to get people to switch over to these cleaner fuels, cleaner and, like I say, more, you know, domestically abundant fuels. And so we put the Chevy Cruze together, which is just it's a really awesome platform to begin with. I give props to GM for building this car, and you know, it's a very, you know, efficient platform. And it's kind of, you know, sized just right for, there's kind of a hole in the market over here in the natural gas vehicle industry that we're trying to fill with it. So it kind of fits that hole pretty well.
Now, I love how I'm looking at a website, and it's showing the trunk space with the conversion and what will hold
the
Cruze versus the Honda.
Yeah, because the Cruze is a little bit bigger of a vehicle, we actually have the benefit of having a larger trunk. Is compressed natural gas? It's a compressed fuel, and so it takes up, you know, more space than being a liquid. You know, we have to kind of package the vehicle as constructively as we can to, you know, minimize the amount of intrusiveness into the vehicle. Whereas gasoline fuel tanks are conformable, they can fit shapes up underneath the vehicle. We're really limited right now to cylindrical shapes or round shapes to contain the, you know, the pressure that that CNG is stored to, and so that really limits us to, you know, putting a, you know, a round peg in a square hole essentially, and that typically is the trunk. And so, but because the Cruze has a bigger trunk than the Honda Civic, we're able to essentially get out about 4 cubic feet bigger than the only factory produced CNG vehicle, which is the Honda Civic.
Now, why dedicated instead of bi-fuel like the old Cavalier was?
Well, you know, both of them are, you know, both of them have their pros and cons, without a doubt. Our take on this, I've been dealing with dedicated vehicles for, you know, a number of years now. Our theory is that, you know, because it is a dedicated monofuel-only vehicle, you know, that's going to require the use of infrastructure being put in to utilize the vehicle. It's always a chicken and egg conundrum with, you know, trying to expand a new technology like natural gas. It's either, you know, you have the fuel or you have the car, which, you know both of them have to happen at the same time in reality. But there's a big drive in the U.S. to take the transportation sector, the heavy duty or over-the-road transportation over to natural gas because of the cost benefits. You know, the nationwide average for natural gas per gasoline gallon equivalent is around $2. So you're starting to see a lot of transport fleets, you know, changing over to natural gas because of the cost savings. And so with that being said, you know, that's spurring more infrastructure along the interstate highway system. And so that makes having a natural gas vehicle a little bit easier than it was, say, 10 years ago when the stations were pretty sparse. Now, there are around 60 to 65 million homes in the U.S. that use natural gas for heating and, you know, cooking and things like that. And what I tell people is that, you know, the infrastructure for natural gas technically is everywhere. You know, if you're one of the homes that have, you know, natural gas, you know, the thing that you lack is a compressor. There's a company called BRC FuelMaker that has for-market little home refueling units, and I have one myself that I refuel at my house, and it works out to like $1.05 to $1.10 per gallon equivalent. And so,
ooh,
and that gallon equivalent is exactly a gallon equivalent of gasoline, so it's the same performance, the same range. You know, so whatever you get out of that gallon of gasoline is, you know, equivalent to the GG of natural gas. And
now,
so we're talking about...
But wouldn't I have a hard time traveling long distances trying to find compressed natural gas to refill?
Well, yes and no. I think right now, you know, the natural gas vehicle market has always been geared towards fleets, you know, whether it's the cities or the county and municipal fleets or, you know, private business fleets. They've always been kind of centered towards them because, one, is they typically have centralized refueling on site or they have a refueling station close by. And it's never been really kind of geared out towards the individuals where this would kind of, you know, would come into play. But for the individuals, you know, it's unfortunately right now because of the need for fueling stations or more fueling stations, you know, to get, you know, essentially one on every corner to make it viable for the average commuter. This is more kind of suited as a second vehicle kind of thing right now. But we're hoping that, you know, in the next... you know, 10 to 15 years, that we're able to at least double the available stations that are out there. And it's going to take quite a bit of investment from the not only the government but from the private sector as well. And it has been really gaining speed quite a bit with the over-the-road trucks. So one, yes, it is, it's a little, you know, inconvenient for individuals right at this moment, but it is possible to do that. And then two, it is, you know, more geared towards fleet applications. And so we're, like I say, we're hoping that it spreads like wildfire, to be honest with you. We want to see this technology out there, whether it's from us or whether it's from General Motors or Ford or whatever it may be. We want to see this technology really implemented in a broad scale.
I'm looking at this article here, and it says that the Cruise has 20 more horsepower and 24 more foot-pounds of torque over the next competitor, which would be the Honda Civic. How'd you do that?
Well, I think it's just the engine architecture, the EcoTech engine from GM. It's a little bit more power dense than the one that's in the Civic. So we're kind of starting out not with a better engine, but I mean we're starting out with a more powerful engine to begin with. And then our modifications are you know, really calibrated and fine tuned to the point where we can get the performance and you know, the economy and things like that. But both vehicles have 1.8-liter engines, and when we do get the certification on this vehicle, it would include the 1.4-liter turbo as well. But both vehicles are 1.8-liter. Both vehicles are extremely clean on emissions. I mean, you know, very, very clean, where we've got typically, you know, you will take these vehicles to a laboratory for the emissions testing process to get it, you know, certified and okayed for use on the public highway. But we take it to a lab that doesn't sample background emissions, because it certainly helps you know, dial in and you know, keeps the other ambient emissions out of the equation. So instead of sampling from the background air where your tires are throwing up vapor and, you know, those types of things, it's actually sampled from bottles, and so we're able to really you know, get really good results with it, essentially. So
exactly how does this work? Do you take a Cruise off the assembly line with no fuel system, and then they ship it to you, and then you backfit it? Is it covered under GM warranty? How's all that work if one of our listeners wants to buy one of these cars?
Well, I wish all the above, but in reality, the vehicle comes would be bought either from a dealer or the certification would cover certain model years of existing vehicles. And so there's two different ways that we look at it. One, there are, you know, taxi fleets that are looking at using smaller vehicles, downsizing, and they're already using the Toyota Prius and the Ford Escapes and things like that. And so I think generally, you know, the taxi companies are really looking at fine-tuning and maximizing, you know, their dollar value, you know, in a smaller vehicle. And so converting or retrofitting of existing vehicles, you know, could be done at a one of our facilities that we're setting up the network as we speak, you know, to be honest with you. But that could be done there. The other way to do it is to buy a new vehicle from a dealer and then have it retrofitted and then shipped off to the customer. So we're kind of right now we're still in the finishing off the getting it ready to market thing, and we're working on, you know, the installer distribution network. And so if an individual wanted one of these vehicles, they could certainly call us. Once we have the certification onto them, we can, you know, arrange to get that done. So, but unfortunately, because these aren't built into the factory, like, say, the Honda Civic, you know, you have the retrofit cost. In other words, you have a gasoline, you know, fuel system already on the vehicle that you have to take off that you've already paid for. But that gets taken off and it gets, you know, disposed of, and then you retrofit it with this fuel system. So unfortunately, because they're not built in the factory, you have to bear that cost twice. And so ultimately what we want to see happen is we want to see, you know, the OEM manufacturers, you know, build these vehicles in-house as a way to drop the costs, you know, of the vehicle or the fuel system. And, you know, obviously buying in large quantities as well, that helps drop the cost, you know, whether it's the cylinders or, you know, the fuel injectors or whatever it might be. Buying in those larger quantities, like the OEMs can do, could always, you know, certainly drops the cost. So we're definitely hopeful that, you know, in years in the future here, pretty soon, that we can see, you know, more OEM, you know, type involvement with, you know, with this industry. So,
other than the Civic, have these things ever been built in house? I have a 2000 Dodge van that's dedicated. Was that built in house, or was that farmed out to an outside company?
Okay, I got to dust off the cobwebs on that one. I believe they were built in-house by Chrysler. Ford, at the time, their biofuel systems were converted by a third or by a tier type manufacturing company. But Dodge, I believe they were installed at the factory. Their current product right now, which is a biofuel Ram 2500 pickup, is built in a facility or a factory down in Mexico. And so Chrysler has, you know, has the I guess, you know, I'm not speaking for them, obviously, but, you know, the Chrysler vehicles are built in a factory down there. Ford currently has what they call a qualified vehicle modifier program that, given that the installers, you know, install an approved piece of equipment and it's done to the QVM standards, that would essentially be covered by any Ford warranty through any dealer. General Motors has a different take onto it, where they do the design, the testing in-house, but they have it manufactured by a third party, or second party, I'm sorry, through a tier-level manufacturing process. And so the big three are, you know, they all have their different takes on, you know, the you know, the natural gas or propane, for that fact, vehicle construction, so.
So tell me this. Compressed natural gas. We live here in Northeast Ohio, and they're mining here and Marcellus and Utica Shale and natural gas, and it can change the future, and I think it's going to. But how long is it going to take for the consumers to really catch on to a clean burning fuel like this? And for the politicians to get in line that there is a clean alternative that they don't want to discuss.
Yeah, it's going to take a number of years. One, because the annual vehicle yield, or in other words, what all the OEM production, whether from the U.S. or from Asia, the vehicles, or even from Europe, we typically consume about 7 million, you know, vehicles per year, as far as, you know, new vehicles. And right now, the capacity of the industry, as it stands, you know, working at full capacity could essentially cover, you know, about a percent of that annually. And so there's going to have to be growth in, you know, the components manufacturing, whether it's the cylinders or the fuel injectors or the tubing or those types of components. There's going to have to be, you know, considerable growth before we even put a dent into the annual vehicle yield. And so, one of the things that we're doing here, we're kind of out there as a company with some of these ideas, but one of the things that we're trying to do is we're putting together some high-performance vehicles. Is that, we're building some hot rods. And so we've got a few vehicles here that we're constructing right now that either run on natural gas or propane. They kind of highlight some of the technology that Crazy Diamond offers, you know, in the aftermarket for different projects and programs, but what we're trying to do with these is we're trying to show the average American, you know, how natural gas or propane, you know, performs, you know, to let them know that it, to let people know that it, you know, it sounds the same, it feels the same, it accelerates the same or nearly the same, but you have the environmental benefits, and then two, you know, we're not fighting anybody over this fuel, right? So, so we're trying to show people and get it into kind of a you know, an area where a lot of people can relate to, because the, you know, my little figure, and it's unsupported, but it's like 99.5% of Americans have no idea that you can do this to, you know, convert vehicles, or that these fuels are available to them, and so. So our thought is you know, to get this out there in a performance side of it all, and see what people think, and just get it out there and show them what you, you know, show them what you can do with it.
And not only that, the old systems, like they used on the Cavaliers, there was a considerable hit on the performance. And I do some of this, and that's the complaint I get.
Yeah, the technology has changed quite a bit. I mean, you know, retrospectively, I mean, the technology, you know, from the big three, or from actually from all the OEMs, to be honest with you, I mean, you know, the vehicles have gotten very good. You know, the technology is it's very fine-tuned, and you're seeing some really awesome products coming out of the OEM side of the world. But I think it really has to do a lot with the software or the tools that these engineers have to design these products, where you can rapid prototype, you know, a complete engine or a dashboard. You know, you're able to build these parts before you build the parts. You're able to print them or do whatever. And so so literally you're able to model and really fine-tune these technologies. And I think that, you know, back in the day, you know, I started in this industry when I was in 1994, you know, and back in the day, you know, the industry was, you know, 10 years behind. You know, they had carbureted systems, and then they had, you know, fumigation-type injection systems, and they finally went to multiport. But I'd say since probably 2005 and newer, as the industry has migrated towards, you know, obviously multiport-style injection, the technology's just gotten better. And so, you know, one of the Achilles heel to the industry, for myself at least, is, you know, when you're talking to a fleet operator who has purchased these types of systems, or, you know, the older types of systems in the past, or they've had really bad customer service, it really makes it hard to, you know, market these to, you know, that customer now, saying, hey, look at the technology that we've got. It's really, really good. And so what we've got to do, we've got to get this out there in a big, broad swath, and, you know, and show the general public and get a good positive, you know, reaction and response, you know, to the technology, because it is very good now. We're able to achieve very low emissions. We're in a bi-fuel vehicle. You know, you're kind of limited to, you know, when you certify the vehicle with EPA or CARB, you're kind of limited to the standards that the vehicle was certified for on gasoline. But with a dedicated vehicle, because you don't have the gasoline system in there, you're able to certify to, you know, the lowest standards that are out there. And another really big benefit of natural gas vehicles is there's no evaporative emissions. We always say if there's an evaporative emissions, you know, you've got a leak. But this evaporative emissions is like, just, you know, on a hot summer day, and you go up to your gas station, you open your gas cap from your car, and that big old gush of, you know, stink comes out of the gas tank. Yeah, that big old stink comes out of the gas tank. Well, that's raw hydrocarbon that's being introduced into the atmosphere. You know, and you do that times, you know, 300 million vehicles, and you do that at least once a week. That's a lot of emissions, and it's a lot of wasted energy that's going out the, you know, just going up in the air, not including the drips of the gasoline, you know, on the ground as you're trying to put the thing back on the fill pump. So natural gas vehicles benefit, you know, us in general as Americans. I mean, via, you know, again, we're not fighting anybody for the fuel. The cost is pretty stable. We've got a glut of supply. It's going to, you know, it's moderate, really renewable. And so it's just kind of one of those win-win scenarios in the cost of it. You know, we're able to, the cost of the fuel is considerably lower than gasoline. So I think, you know, there's lots and lots of benefits to doing it. The downsides are, again, as, you know, the cylinders take up space, you may not be able to go as far, and there aren't as many fueling stations as there are on gasoline. But other than that, I think it's the easiest transitionable fuel that we've got, at our disposal right now.
I'm on your website, and your website, I just want to make sure, it's crazydiamondperformance.com. Am I correct?
That's correct. Uh-huh.
And there's something called Cruiser 5.3L.
Yes, that's we build crate engines for pre-emission control vehicles that allow, you know, somebody saying they have a 65 Corvette and they wanted to put a new General Motors LS-based engine in with new controls, fuel injection controls to it. We build crate engines to support that. We have our engine harnesses manufactured by a company that's their service disabled-owned company, but they hire disabled vets to do the assembly work of the engine harnesses and stuff like that. So we have, you know, products for, you know, the high-performance hot rod side of the world, even gasoline, too. We play with the dirty stuff. We also, we've got to do a lot of different products, even heavy-duty engines for, say, school buses and things like that. We're looking at bringing those to market as well. So we've got quite a swath of stuff that we're trying to do all at the same time, believe it or not. So
to convert a car from, you know, from gasoline and just to compressed natural gas, what are people looking at? What kind of investment are they looking at for me to buy a car?
Yeah, well, typically they're looking at a, you know, it could be anywhere from $6,000 to, you know, $12,000 as an upfit cost.
Okay.
And, you know, fleets that use a lot of fuel have a pretty quick return on investment. You know, unfortunately, vehicles that are efficient have a much longer return on investment than say, like a, you know, a Ford, you know, big Ford box truck or something like that. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to change the dynamics of how people look at this and market a vehicle like the Cruise Natural Gas, you know, from the aftermarket. We're trying to market it as, look, you know, there are Cruise platforms, you know, that are in the $25,000 to $26,000 range, whether it's the diesel or the LTZ. What we're trying to do is we're trying to price this, like, right in between there. And fortunately, it works out to where it's about $1,000 less than the Civic Natural Gas. But again, going back to the costs of all this, we have costs that are associated with developing the fuel system. We have the costs that are associated with certification with the government, and then obviously the marketing and the payback and all that other stuff. But in the retrofit business, you're paying for that fuel system twice. And I'd like to see, you know, the easiest way to really get this out there is to have the OEMs do it, where you know, they're able to buy these things in quantity and they're not replacing fuel system components. They're essentially installing it for the first time on the line. So eventually that's where we want to get to.
Are you willing to do you have a few more minutes so we can take a couple calls?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Dee. Go ahead, Six.
I just want to make sure I understand this right. I can buy a brand-new Cruise, ship it to you. You can convert it, ship it back to me, and it's still $1,000 less than a brand-new Civic.
Well, it depends. Yes and no. We base this $25,995 figure off of the MSRP of the LS Cruise because that's the base fleet vehicle that, you know, the cities, the counties, the states, or businesses can buy. That particular vehicle is typically the lowest cost. And so, you know, you apply the retrofit cost on top of that, you end up at $25,995 or less, or more, depending on if you wanted to go with a higher trim level, that type of thing.
Well,
so the conversion cost is obviously the difference of that. But you could take an existing Cruise if it's covered under the certification that we're going after and then retrofit it, but it would be the cost of the system.
Pianki, your mic is on.
You know, I like natural gas vehicles. I had opportunity to drive one when I was in Los Angeles one year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the make and year of the car. I believe it was a Chevy something. And I drove practically from Thursday to Sunday. And by the time I did find a place to refill it, it only cost about like $6. So what I was going to ask is these refilling stations – how much complicated, how much dissimilar are they from what we're used to now? Of course, what we have now, these huge tanks in the ground, and I think they have done a lot in order to alleviate the possibility of contaminating the soil. So how much difference are we talking about in these filling stations that will be replacing the natural gas that your vehicle used?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, obviously, with gasoline, you have the environmental effect of, you know, if you've got leaks or, you know, the hydrocarbon emissions and those types of things. You know, it's very detrimental to the atmosphere. You know, methane is detrimental to the atmosphere as well, but it's more of a kind of a controlled thing. The compressors themselves, by BRC FuelMaker, they've been in the market for a long time, as long as I've been in this industry. And, you know, they have smaller units that fit on the garage wall. So, in other words, if you have natural gas at your house, you can pull your vehicle in, plug it into the, you know, to the pump, hit the start button, you know, you wake up, then you have a full tank of fuel. It's that simple. But there are two units that they have. One is called the fill, and that sits on your garage wall inside your garage, or they have a larger fuel station that fits outside your, say, your garage or wherever it might be that you plug into and you leave your vehicle in the driveway. The unit that fits inside your home is around a half a gallon per hour as far as the fill rate. And so, you know, what it's meant to do is it's meant to get that commuter that drives, you know, 20 to 115 miles or something like that, you know, to drive in that uses 2 or 3 gallons of fuel a day to essentially just keep the tank topped off. And then the larger station would do that essentially in half the time. But the costs are, like I said, last time I looked, they were around $3,500 to $4,000 for the fill, and then for the bigger ones, $7,500 to, you know, whatever, a little bit higher than that for the other compressor. The larger compressor does have the benefit of being able to refuel two vehicles at once. And so for fleet operators that have two vehicles, yeah, you can plug two vehicles in overnight, they're full of fuel. And so your fuel costs are, you know, like I say, they work out, you know, a residential rate at my house up here in southeast Michigan is around $1.05 per gallon. And so so the compressor essentially takes the low-pressure gas that you have, you know, feeding your stove, your water heater, whatever you have in your house, takes that and compresses it through four stages and then puts it into the vehicle. The unit is, you know, has all kinds of, you know, safety shutoffs and things like this. But once the vehicle reaches a certain pressure, which is typically a 3,600 PSI, it essentially shuts off. And that's what it considers a full tank of fuel.
Let me ask you another question real quick. Now, you mentioned several hours, but now when I refilled this vehicle and also at the same station they had the traditional pumps, mm-hmm. pumping petrol, it didn't take no longer than it would to fill up a regular gasoline vehicle. So are you saying that they use a different technology there, different equipment and so forth?
Yeah, the home units are what they call slow fill. And so they have limitations to what, how much and how fast you can compress or deliver based on, you know, what's the volume of the fuel coming into the unit itself. And so that's the limiting factor for that. For gas stations, their limiting factor is how fast can they compress the fuel, essentially. So there's the fast fuel compressors typically at the gas stations, and these are the things that you're going to see, you know, out on the road, supporting the big trucks. You're going to see high volume, you know, dispensing units and stuff like that. So they're able to compress fuel, and, you know, some of the compressors can compress, you know, 2 or 3 gallons a minute or 10 gallons per minute, depending on how big of a unit it is.
Your conversions can be filled at one of the stations that I mentioned, though, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. As long as it's a CNG station, these vehicles are rated for 3,600 psi. So wherever you have a 3,600 psi, compressor dispenser, you can refuel it there. So states like Utah is very proactive in expanding the NGV technology and infrastructure. California is really big into it. Oklahoma, you know, so there are states that have abundant infrastructure that, you know, make it owning a monofuel vehicle, you know, very easy to operate. They've got the fueling stations, not at every corner, but every, you know, 10th corner they've got one instead of every 20th corner, you know, as it exists in other states. So so you can definitely, you know, the benefits, again, of going to a fast fuel compressor, it's the time to fill. It's equal to whatever gasoline would be, typically. The costs are a little bit more because now you're paying for the compressor, you're paying for more electricity, and, you know, paying for the marketing and everything else. The downside is that going to a fast fill compressor, if you were to refill your tanks from empty, because of the nature of the fuel, how it gets excited, being put into a cylinder, high rates, you know, high velocities, it can take, you know, some of the volume there and turn it into useful space, essentially. So you get essentially 80% of the capacity of that cylinder if you were filling up from dead empty at a fast fill station. So so that effectively drop your range in the vehicle, whereas putting it in via slow, you're able to get nearly 100% of the capacity of the cylinder or of what it's rated for.
And what was that range again? About 300 miles, you said, or?
It really just depends on the vehicle. The cruise, we're projecting right now that it's about a 220-mile in the city range and then closer to 300 miles on the highway. You know, and again, it really just depends on how big of a cylinder, how much fuel you can put on board.
Okay.
So the range would be, you know, most typically and lately with the technology, it's been, you know, pretty equal to what gasoline is. Sometimes better,
so,
but most of the time.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Philadelphia, did you have any comments? Sorry. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask if the major car dealers like Honda and Ford have started to convert over to natural gas vehicles in terms of their manufacturing.
Honda is the only manufacturer that builds a small monofuel vehicle in house. They're produced here in the U.S. and so there's dealers that are set out that have that can sell these vehicles. I think Honda as a company has made more of these dealers available so that individuals can buy the vehicles now. Honda's been producing the CNG Cruise since like 1997, so it's been a very consistent program with them. It's definitely a nice vehicle. They have all the resources and the tools of their parent company, and it's just, you know, they can build a really good vehicle. They've been one of the longer, committing kind of companies that are out there in terms of having this technology available. Ford, GM, and Chrysler kind of have their own approach to doing things. We'll see where the next, certainly 5 or 10 years, the technology and the aftermarket and the engines and the vehicles are changing so rapidly, that it's going to be really interesting to see where everything goes in the next 5 or 10 years.
And the number of public stations is just growing by leaps and bounds. A friend of mine with a bi-fuel car just took his family to Florida, or excuse me, to South Carolina, and he was able to buy natural gas all the way between Canton, Ohio, and Red Bank, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So the infrastructure is growing.
It's changing. It's
rapidly.
Changing. It's not as easy, but there's still a complication to it on the freeway, because I don't think, like, if I'm going from here to Detroit, I would have to get off of the exit to find a CNG.
You have to plan your trip.
I have to plan my trip completely.
You
I just couldn't,
have,
you know. And, you
yeah,
know, I'm a
yeah.
woman. We don't plan that, you know. We just don't do it like that. We just
and
look
it's
at
the direction
and say,
thing,
oh, it's, yeah. You know, we just look and it says E. Uh-oh, we got to get gas. And if you got to plan it, it's difficult.
See, that, and that's something that the government's done that's really neat. They've got a website called CNG Locator.
Yeah.
And it's actually got a trip planner on it.
Hear me one thing. You're talking about women. We just found out where the oil goes. You want us to now plan the trip and fill up the tank? That's just too much work.
Well, where's the nearest station here in Youngstown?
Right down the street.
Salt Springs Road.
Right.
Just opened about 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yes. And I used it the other day, and it's awesome.
By the truck stops?
Right there.
Mr. Fuel.
Yeah, right there at one of the truck
Mr.
stops.
Mr. Fuel.
Absolutely.
At Mr. Fuel.
And there's several in Michigan. I mean, I've checked them out, but I'm just saying. You know.
And that one up there is awesome. I used it the other day because I pull a camper with CNG. And it's hard to find places to fuel that I can pull a camper through. And that one up there actually has a diesel pump and a natural gas pump in the same aisle. It's awesome.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to fill up your truck?
About as long as it takes to fill a diesel tank.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I got 17. I run a dual fuel diesel natural gas, and I got 17 gallon of natural gas, and about the same amount of time.
Okay. Kevin, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us. Any closing comments?
No, but there's lots of information out there on the web.
Give us your website again, and let people know
crazy.
Where to find you.
Sure. It's crazydiamondperformance.com. Always updating the website, so it's kind of we're a small company and we're trying to get the information out there as soon as we can. But we did want to on the cruise, we wanted to certainly start the marketing on that as well. But in any case, so if you go to crazydiamondperformance.com, there's a web form out there called CNG Chat, It's kind of a community of natural gas vehicle owners and businesses and stuff like that. There's a lot of information and resources on. If there's anybody interested in looking at the prices, there is the Alternative Fuels Data Center, the AFDC, and then there's the fuel station locator component of that website. Then there's also an aftermarket or a third-party website called CNG Prices, and CNG Prices will list up-to-date information on the fueling stations, where they are, if they're operational, or you know that type of stuff. So there's plenty of information out there on the website. And but yeah, I definitely appreciate having me on today.
And it is crazydiamondperformance.com. Great website too. I've been on it for the last half an hour, and it's very very informative. So thank you so much.
Thanks again.
Thank you. You've been listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. When we come back, we're going to talk about Stephen A. Smith, his apology. And we'll take it to an open mic if you want to talk about anything else that we've talked about today. Again, the number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of our break.
The lightning strike that killed one and injured several more on Venice Beach in Los Angeles got a lot of media attention. But although thunderstorms in L.A. are rare, lightning on beaches is common. Large flat areas are the worst place to be in a thunderstorm. What's the best? Inside, away from windows. If you can't get inside, stay in your car with the windows and doors closed. You're not even safe in bed these days, especially if you've got your cell phone with you. Cell phones get hot, especially when they're under a blanket. In Texas, a 13-year-old girl was sound asleep with her cell phone, and it set fire to her bed. She escaped. Nobody was hurt, but from now on, she says she'll leave the phone on her bedside table. Cell phones can also drain your wallet, and the Federal Trade Commission says time to do something about that. The agency wants new rules to protect consumers from bogus third-party charges on their mobile phone bills. Consumers lose millions of dollars every year for things they didn't order and don't want, like horoscopes and movie star news. I'm Stacey Cohen. You can learn more at consumeraffairs.com.
Be a Bia. How about that? Is that okay? I guess that's okay, right? Minnesota accent. Eh? Huh? No, just the southern accent. Punish our enemies and reward our friends. The liberal left is very hostile to people from the South, just to name one group of Americans.
You're listening to the Valley's News Talk.
ABC News. I'm Richard Davies. Israel's government says the shelling of a UN school in Gaza this morning is under investigation. 15 people died, many children among the wounded. ABC's Terry Moran traveled to Gaza with Israeli Defense Forces.
I asked the commander of this brigade about the children who are dying in Gaza right now, the innocents, and he said he thinks of his kids. A child is a child is a child, he told me. But he blames Hamas for using the civilian population of Gaza as a human shield.
Israel's military says mortar shells had been fired from near that school and its soldiers fired back. A health alert sent by the CDC to doctors across America about the Ebola outbreak in Western Africa, where more than 700 people have died in recent weeks.
Medical personnel who are going there need to take special precautions. I would not go to these regions just for casual travel. The situation now is looking very grim.
ABC News health and medical editor Dr. Richard Besser. More signs of growth for the U.S. economy. Government estimate out today says total output grew 4% in the second quarter after a decline during the 3 months of winter. And a payroll report says more than 200,000 jobs were added for the fourth month in a row in July.
It does look like the jobs picture is improving a bit. The composition of jobs is still not perfect. We know that. We still need a lot more college grad jobs. We still need a lot of higher paying jobs in the mix out there. But we are moving in the right direction.
Economist Diane Swank on the July job survey from ADP, a payroll firm. Cleaning up and drying off in Los Angeles after a massive leak of water. It came after a water main break late yesterday. Millions of gallons spewed out, and much of the UCLA campus was soaked. This is ABC News.
Hi, I'm Joan London, and if you're worried about your parent or a loved one living alone like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. With one phone call, you'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. It's a free service, so call now.
800-379-1174. 800-379-1174.
Do you have unfiled tax returns or owe the IRS or state more than $10,000? If you don't take action now, your tax problem is only going to get worse. Seizure of property, bank levies, wage garnishments, and potential criminal prosecution. Call the experts at U.S. Tax Shield for help at 1-800-334-5070. Our tax advisors will review your case for free, inform you of your rights, and give you a guaranteed quote. And we have an A-plus rating with the BBB. So get protected. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 1-800-334-5070.
Ultra high definition is the latest thing in television, but are these new sets worth the extra price compared with most of today's models?
UHD is twice the definition of high definition that consumers get in their homes today.
That's Brian Siegel of Sony Electronics, but Jim Wilcox of Consumer Reports says many viewers won't really notice the difference, saying it's only amounting to a small increase in detail. Somebody looking for a 50-inch TV, you can spend as little as $500 on today's models, but that's a lot cheaper than the new ones coming out with ultra-high def. Publisher HarperCollins says it will remove a passage from the bestseller American Sniper. It sparked a lawsuit from former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, a defamation lawsuit against the book's author, Chris Kyle. The stock market opened generally higher this morning after stronger than expected economic numbers.
Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to Progressive Insurance. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com today and find out if you could save.
Broadcasting from the Ford Studios. Great summer deals are happening now on the full line of Ford vehicles during the Summer Spectacular Sales Event. Visit your Northeast Ohio Ford dealer or drive1ohio.com.
Have you heard? Proactive Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited-time offer. Give us a call at 800-388-3759, because we're going to let a million people try Proactive Plus risk-free and get two free gifts. And also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 1-800-388-3759. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 1-800-388-3759. That's 1-800-388-3759.
Mark Levin.
If Barack Obama had been president instead of Ronald Reagan during the Reagan two terms, do you think the Soviet Union would have been defeated? Of course not, because Reagan had his head screwed on right.
Weekdays from 6 to 9 p.m. on News Talk 600 WSOM.
Michael Savage. I used to like the title Steppenwolf by Hermann Hesse, once a very popular book. It always signified to me all of the different stages of all of our lives. And if you've been around a while and you had many different lives or incarnations, you're very lucky to see the world as it really is, as opposed to through rose-colored glasses, as it isn't.
Weekdays from 3 to 6 on News Talk 600. Welcome to Tracy and Friends, weekdays from 9 to noon. The show that stimulates your mind on the issues of the day. Call the show at 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
mean by that? We keep talking about the guys. We know you have no business putting your hands on a woman. I don't know how many times I got to reiterate that. But as a man who was raised by women, see, I know what I'm going to do if somebody touches a female member of my family. I know what I'm going to do. I know what my boys are going to do. I know what I'm going to have to remind myself that I work for the worldwide leader. I'm going to have to get law enforcement officials involved because of what I'm going to be tempted to do. But what I've tried to employ the female members of my family, some of whom you all met and talked to and what have you, is that, again, and this is what I've done this all my life, let's make sure we don't do anything to provoke wrong actions. Because if I come, or somebody else come, whether it's law enforcement officials, your brother, or the fellas that you know, if we come after somebody has put their hands on you, it doesn't negate the fact that they already put their hands on you. So let's try to make sure that we can do our part in making sure that that doesn't happen. Now, you got some dudes that are just horrible, and they're going to do it anyway. And there's never an excuse to put your hands on a woman. But domestic violence or whatever the case may be, with men putting their hands on women is obviously a very real issue in our society. And I think that just talking about what guys shouldn't do, we got to also make sure that you can do your part to do whatever you can do to try to make sure it doesn't happen. We know they're wrong. We know they're criminal. We know they probably deserve to be in jail. In Ray Rice's case, he probably deserves more than the 2-game suspension, which we both acknowledged. But at the same time, we also have to make sure that we learn as much as we can about elements of provocation. Not that there's real provocation, but the elements of provocation, you got to make sure that you address it, because what we've got to do is do what we can to try to prevent the situation from happening in any way. And I don't think that's broached enough, is all I'm saying.
Friday, speaking right here on First Take on the subject of domestic violence, I made what can only amount to the most egregious error of my career. While elaborating on thoughts concerning the NFL's ruling versus Ray Rice, following a domestic dispute with his then-fiance, I ventured beyond the scope of our discussion by alluding to a woman's
Hey, I'm back. I'm trying to play the apology, and it decided that it didn't want to play, so I've got to find one that will. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I'm going to try this again. It is Stephen A. Smith, and he's issuing an apology because of the comments that he made, and now you're going to hear the apology that he made. I don't think this is good. You know, I didn't think Jimmy the Greek should have issued an apology, and when I look back in retrospect, would you say six?
What about Howard Cosell?
What did he apologize for?
He got fired from Monday Night Football for a black player was running. He said, "Look at that little monkey run."
Yeah, he should have been fired.
You don't think that was a slip of the tongue?
No, that's not a slip of the tongue. That's stupid.
But
I mean, it was 1971.
I don't care if it was 1971 or 1959. He should have been fired because, you know, he called the man a monkey.
Can you really attribute that as being indicative of quote unquote white supremacy when Cosell was part of an oppressed minority himself?
It might have been a press minority, but you don't call little black folks running down the street little monkeys. That's you ought to be better. You ought to know better. When you get Howard Cosell knew better. He knew what he was saying, and he thought he could have gotten away with it. But then I didn't agree with. I don't think that Rush Limbaugh should have gotten reprimanded and getting his contract withdrawn when he said something about was it Donovan?
Donovan McNabb.
Yes. So I had a problem with that.
Well, and the thing is,
we look
at things through different eyes, too, because you were talking about Bill Clinton saying to Ted Kennedy this guy would have been carrying his coffee 10 years ago. I looked at that as is this a young guy coming up, and we're senior statesmen, and he's beneath us in his pecking order.
But see, that's not how he said it, and that's not what he meant. What he was saying was he's a black man, and look at where he is today.
Are you sure we can get to the point where we can probe people's minds to know exactly?
Come on now,
let's be
real about this. You don't have to probe some people's minds if a young kid calls a little kid a monkey, he may not know the difference. When Howard Cosell called somebody a monkey, he knew what he was doing. Because you understand,
Hello.
The jokes that were going on at that time,
mm-hmm.
jokes that were funny at that time about if you want to let baby, if you want to babysit black kids with their lips and stick them
Hello.
To the wall. Hold on. So you have to realize that at that time, the jokes of talking about little monkeys, if you looked at the postcards that they used to send during the 40s, 50s, and 60s of African Americans who were monkeys running in a field, who were, you have to understand, you, they, he knew all that. It, this is not about, you know, him not knowing. And it might have been a ha-ha, hee-hee moment for him, but it wasn't. He knew what he was saying.
But because of the history of the oppression that
I care less about him or his oppression.
Whoa.
Absolutely. He ought to know better. When you get to that level of the game, when you're Howard Cosell, you know better. But I will say this. What Eric, what Stephen Smith said was not in error.
No, it wasn't. He told
and so,
the truth. I mean, you've got some guys out there that are hyper-aggressive, and you've got some women out there that will intentionally
provoke a man. You can't get mad when somebody tells you the truth because you don't like it. I was telling someone this morning, we were talking about Imus. Imus should have never lost his contract with CBS nor come off of MSNBC because of an error in what he said. And don't get me wrong, it was very insensitive of what he said, and it was a bad joke. But it did not show malice.
Yeah,
there
but the thing with Stephen A. Smith
Philadelphia, is, did I call you in yet? I did not, did I? No.
Well, I wanted to comment on Stephen A. Smith because you still write
you
for the Philadelphia.
I'm going. We're not doing. I'm keep on telling you, we got a whole new show. Don't like it? You got to change it. Don't call it, and or don't listen. New show. We're going to go this way, whether you like it or not.
Hey, Tracy.
Hold on, Pianki. You can't. I can't shut them off and then have you come in. Let me finish. So what I'm saying is, even with Stephen A. Smith, you know what he said was not insensitive to women. He told women that you need to be held accountable just like men. You shouldn't provoke men.
Exactly.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
You shouldn't do that.
I'm agreeing with you.
You know, there are certain things that you shouldn't do, and to apologize for saying it just because I disagree with it, you can disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. And even if he was talking about a football player who had been suspended because of a domestic violence, that was may have been something different.
Mm-hmm.
But we still don't know what happened there between this man and this girlfriend.
I was just shoes. I'd have stuck to my guns and gone on the lecture circuit.
No, he wouldn't have gone. He wouldn't have gotten hired. Remember, he's got a job to do, and he needed that job. Go ahead, Philadelphia.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was Stephen A. Smith used to write for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I always found him to be a loudmouth commentator. Basically, if you're dealing with issues of domestic violence, under no circumstances should a man have to actually strike a woman, especially if someone is a football player, somebody who is actively trying to work on their body and they're lifting weights and they're very strong. A person like that should definitely not hit a woman. And these are the types of issues that need to be dealt with, but not on the air, not in this type of venue. But basically, if you're talking about athletes, people that work on their body, people that lift weights, people that are very strong, these people should not be involved in any type of domestic violence at all.
Let me ask you a question. No, they tell me boxers. Boxers should never get into a fist fight in the street. Because
right.
because of their skill, they are a lethal weapon.
Right.
But if I know that you are a boxer, should I not provoke you not to be mad enough? And sometimes you got to listen to the little voice in your head that says, "Step away." But I have to be. I should not provoke you to be or antagonize you to get in a fight.
Well, even if a boxer is antagonized, even if somebody who is involved in martial arts is antagonized to get into a fight, they should know
you,
what their skill level is, that if they can step away, they shouldn't use they shouldn't have to use like any type of their maximum force to fight, meaning that
okay, so,
they should try to subdue the person or they should try to do something to get the person to back off. But if you know that you have that type of skill, you definitely don't engage in a fist fight with someone.
Sometimes, so at any cost, is there ever a reason for me as a boxer to never get in a fight. Is there any case for me as a bodybuilder or me as a cage fighter to never get into an altercation? What I'm saying is at what level, as me as a professional fighter, at me as an athlete, do I have the right to defend myself?
What I'm saying is you have the right to defend yourself, but if you know that you have the type of skill where the person is able to harm someone in a very violent way, they should not get into a fist fight or into any type of physical altercation with that individual. They should do everything
they can
to back off from it.
I understand, but sometimes there is no back. I mean, when I'm talking about this, and you have to realize this is what I've been taught. You do not antagonize a man to provoke him to want to hit you.
What's antagonizing and provoking?
Diva, you are the kind of person that if he walks away, you're allowed to go in the same room and follow him.
I'm more likely the person who's going to walk away because I know that I can get physical, so I will walk away before someone else walks away.
Okay, so I got it wrong. There are some women who will walk through, a man walks away, and I've seen it done. She will throw a shoe at the back of his head. If he shuts the door, she'll tear the door down because she wants to be heard, and she will pin him in a corner. Yeah, he's got to push her out the way, and I have seen women call the police on domestic violence because not that they got hit, but because they got pushed out the way because the man was trying to get out of the way from hitting her. She was messing with his children. She was doing something that he was passionate about, and he was trying to get out of there, especially when you have, you know, some things that go on and there's some buttons that you can push on anyone. And if you don't, and I'm sorry, we need to know when to walk away and when to let him go. Don't follow him around the whole house.
I agree.
Don't follow him around the house and try to get your point across.
If you're following him around the house and yelling at him, it's okay for him to backhand you.
No, that's not what I said.
No. Why are you going to follow him around the house? Why are you
what
following him around the house?
What happened when she hit him?
And the other day I saw a woman cold cock a man in the truck, and I was like, wow.
You're big enough to give a lick. You're big enough to take one.
And see,
you hit me, you're getting
damn right.
Women jump on men, women slap men, women scratch the crap out of men, women go after their precious prized possessions, they cut stuff up, and they burn stuff up, they set it on fire, and then they be like, well, I should be able to do that because I'm a woman. You can't do all that.
You call the police on me, they'll have a real reason to get there.
Go ahead, Pianchi.
Lie on me. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Pianchi.
Well, you know, I really was going to continue discussion on the compressed natural gas, talking about the opportunities
that
exist in this new business.
Oh, Pierre, go back to Stephen A. Smith.
Pardon me?
Because tomorrow we can come back and do compressed natural gas again. I'm quite sure Stick will find
but
somebody
else. But on this
thing,
issue here, you know, as you were talking about boxers, knowing that that's all out the window because people that they carry concealed weapons. And what are they supposed to do, shoot you on the tip of your ear? No, I'm shooting them in the heart or the head. It's no certain levels of
–
certain levels of – right. There ain't no such thing as no certain levels of force that you use. If you present it with a threat, you're supposed to eliminate that threat. I'm glad they have concealed weapons. Now you don't have to worry about breaking the fingernails on your fist.
But let me ask you this. Should Stephen A. Smith have been made to apologize for what he said? It was not offensive.
No.
He gave his opinion. Not only did he apologize, but he got a one-week suspension. That is not what you would call good freedom of speech if you're talking about what people think. It almost is you can say what you think as long as I agree and nobody gets offended.
See, the religion of domestic violence, and that's the liberals trying to make a religion out of it, a culture of it, intentionally has blurred the line between deliberate responses and instinctual responses. If you're threatened, the instinctive response is to defend yourself, right?
But people need to be responsible for what they do. And when I say that, in a relationship, both women and men, don't get me wrong, there are some bad monsters out there that beat up women, and there's some women out there who are so broken that they take it. And I am not talking about them. I'm not talking about men that get drunk and just come home and start beating on people. I think they need to be taken out and shot. That's my point. But what I'm saying is there are instances where people are in a situation, and I know of it, that they've lost their jobs and their careers because a woman has, especially when she plays with her kids.
If a man knows how to spin his woman up, he should walk away from everything that he knows how to spin her up. And the same thing with a woman.
Absolutely.
If she knows how to spin her man up, just stay away from it.
And I've watched people who have child support cases.
Yeah.
They have children and they've been divorced. And they, you know, they're messing around with the kids. And women, we manipulate men. We play with them kids because we're mad because he's moved on and we're stuck at home with the kids by home alone and we're mad. And he's no longer paying attention to us. And we have done it. I'm not talking about those that, you know, some of y'all do very well. But there are a lot of those that do not. And they provoke men and they play with men.
Here's my problem with you, Tracy. And my problem with Stephen A. Smith is that you're using the word provocation and antagonizing as if you're only meaning a woman hitting on a man. If a woman is hitting a man and he is trying to get away from her, I have no problem with that man trying to defend himself, but you meet force with like force.
Yes.
However, she busting out your car windows is no reason for you to take the bat and start beating on her with it. Her getting up in your face, pointing all in your face,
yes.
As women do, is no reason for you to smack the crap out of her and give her a WWE beatdown.
Okay, listen, if you go and mess with my stuff, if you go and mess with something that I cherish, do I have the right to pull you off of it? I'm not saying hit her with the bat.
That's what I was going to say. If you're out there beating knocking the windows out of my car with
a ball
bat, do I have a right to grab a hold of you and hold you down?
Philadelphia, please.
No, call the cops.
No, Diva, stop. I'm saying this again, and I mean this sincerely. Please quit talking on top of people just because you got a point.
Well,
go ahead,
at the same time, you got people talk on top of me, too.
So, Diva, how many $1,000 do I have to stand there and watch you destroy this probably uninsured while it takes the cops to get there? Why don't I have a right to grab a hold of you and hold you down?
One, why is your vehicle uninsured when that's against the law? Two, why is it worth $1,000? Ask me a question, so let me answer it.
For that,
no, because you're not being
let me ask you. Ask me a question. Let me answer it.
No, Steven. Listen, we never said the car was uninsured. That's not what he said.
You are not required by law to carry that kind of insurance on your car. The only insurance you are required by law to carry
is liability,
and that's on the other guy. So if I've got a car that I need to get to work and you're beating the windows out of it so I can't get to work, how long am I supposed to stand there and take it before I grab a hold of you and hold you down on the ground and tell my neighbor, call the cops, because this woman's nuts?
Yeah, there's no pissed-off girlfriend insurance.
I'm trying to answer. Is it worth you possibly going to jail?
He was finished.
Is it worth you going to jail? Are you willing to take that risk? Because you already know she's crazy.
Why should I go to jail for stopping you from destroying my property? Why is that a crime? I'm not talking
because
about hitting you.
It's not a crime.
I'm talking about grabbing a hold of you, knocking the windows out of my car.
I don't have a problem with men restraining women who get out of hand. It's the amount of force.
Do you know what a wild woman looks like when she's fighting? I'm serious. If she's swinging a bat and or brick at a car, do you really think she's going to hold still while he's restraining her while the state call the police and wait for them to get there? So what's she going to do?
She's going to fight back, so why even bother? Because you're going
to
get when to hit her back.
What I'm saying is, do you realize that she should have never done it in the first place? She should have walked away also? He can't restrain her? You got to understand, we need
everybody
has to take everyone has to take responsibility for what is going on. And you just can't blame it all on him and not on you, and all on you and not on him. We're not talking about crazy relationships, but we're talking about you have to take responsibility. You have to know when to walk away, and she has to know when to walk away. But you can't put it all on. You know, if he is an athlete and if he is a football player, you have to understand the mindset that he has. And you've got, and you can't push the buttons past to make him
so
go.
We
it's
can't push
like,
men's
who
buttons.
Who was the guy who was on the?
They can push our buttons because who's to say
oh,
she?
Oh, Sheva, shush. Do you understand? Who was the guy from the Seattle Seahawks who went? Who everybody said went after the little reporter?
Richard Sherman.
His name Bruce. Okay, so his adrenaline was already up, and everybody went after him because he hadn't come down yet. He had not decompressed yet. Everybody went after him because it looked as though he was attacking the little girl who was the reporter. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
So if that's the kind of mindset that he has when he is in the zone,
and
go after something that he loves.
Too.
Go after something that he loves. Add a little alcohol to it.
I have a question.
Wait a minute, Diva. I said wait. It's not my English is not that spattered where people can't understand. What kind of mindset do you think he has? Now go after something that he loves. Go after something that he's passionate about.
Watch him come out of the locker room after that game and see his girlfriend beating it, knocking his windows out of his car because she's mad.
Go after something that's going mess with his kids.
Yeah.
Mess with something
okay,
that he's
let me ask you a question.
I forgot my. I'm really got a long brain. I can think past 20 seconds. So the question is, should I know not to provoke him during that time? Really, I should know my man enough to know.
If you are in a long-term committed relationship, absolutely.
I don't know. Listen, don't take nothing crazy to him to right now. Wait until he come home and takes a nap. Then go crazy. But don't go in there being crazy because I'm mad because he won.
Let's just look at this on a blue collar level.
Same thing.
You run the car into the ditch today. The thing that you don't tell your husband when he walks through the door.
No. Good, let him wait for a minute.
Yeah.
But we haven't learned that as women, period. We haven't learned that men have to come in the house and decompress before we actually start throwing everything at him. Go ahead, Diva.
Okay, so you're wanting to talk about the mindset of a man and him, how he treasures his things and how a woman should not go after a man's things. As we all know, athletes tend to cheat. Men tend to cheat. So what about a woman's mindset and her frame of mind if she feels she found out her man's cheating or he's flirting with another woman?
Okay.
So is that enough to say that, okay, it's okay for her to go at her man? And then end up in the altercation that they probably ended
Diva,
up in.
How many women do you know that have found their husband and or man cheating on a woman, and when he walked in the door, she jumped him?
I know a lot of women who got in men's faces for cheating.
Okay, seriously, and he had to restrain himself completely, based upon actually went and got her sisters and had everybody at the house waiting for him when he came home.
I don't know any of them that restrain themselves because all of them would attack.
How many women do you know when they found that their man was cheating, especially if they was cheating with their best girlfriend, that they then went off on the girl and the friend physically?
I know plenty. That's what I'm saying. That's the mindset of
okay.
a woman. That's her precious
okay, so,
thing.
So my question, he did not call the police department on her, and he did not defend himself. He walked away. But how many times have you seen them walk around the house and keep on? I don't know if you saw, I think it was one of Tyler Perry's movies, and she was the baby mama, and she kept on calling him Byron, and she was just crap. She was just worrying the crap out of him everywhere she went. She was having
right,
him
so,
arrested.
And if he would have turned and slapped her, would have been like, oh, that's okay because
Diva,
she was in.
Diva,
she was
no,
getting
no, 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 saying. She had him arrested.
He was arrested for not paying child
Diva,
support.
Diva, listen. He had her arrested. She wasn't mad because of the child support. She was mad because he moved on. It wasn't about the money.
It doesn't matter. She was able to use his non-paying child support against him.
Listen to what I'm saying. It does matter. It does matter.
It does matter.
Things matter. I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends.
Leave the mic
open. WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I'll see you on the other side of my break.
For a moment about a great doctor, Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley.
Yes,
if you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce. The full cup of love.
Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a cup of love.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
Fit Family. Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
I'm Lou Hilaris with your headline news. The U.S. attorney is asking a federal judge to sentence the former owner of a Youngstown oil field service company to 3 years in prison for ordering two former employees to discharge brine and oil field waste to a tributary of the Mahoning River. Prosecutors say that when Lupo owned Hard Rock Excavating, he instructed two employees to discharge brine and oil field waste into the sewer on the road. Waste ultimately made its way into the tributary of the Mahoning River, which led to a massive cleanup effort. It's not a whole lot in Summitville. The only business is the office of Summitville Tile, and, well, there's a post office. And that's about it. With about a total of 135 people living in the limits, there isn't enough tax base to keep the village intact. That's why Mayor Robert Mara said dissolving the village may be their only option. The issue would have to go on a ballot voted on, and the earliest that could happen is in May. If voters say yes, Summitville would be dissolved into Franklin Township. For WSOM News, I'm Julio Flores.
Hi, this is Bill Johnson. I'm your congressman. You know, I've spent so much time visiting and talking with folks across eastern and southeastern Ohio. We've talked about keeping America energy independent and forcing the federal government to live by a responsible budget. We've talked about helping our veterans, reining in the IRS, and even my new project that encourages fatherhood. These discussions help me each time I travel to Washington to represent you in Congress. Although I go there to cast my votes, my family and I live right here in Ohio, and I can do my job even better when I hear from you. That's why I'll be at the Columbiana County Fair to hear your thoughts on issues important to you.
I'm glad Bill Johnson is coming to the fair. He's not like the politicians in Washington. He's one of us.
My family enjoys the county fair, and we're looking forward to talking with Bill Johnson.
Join Bill Johnson at the Columbiana County Fair. For a full list of fairs that Bill Johnson will attend, or to connect with Bill, visit BillJohnsonLeads.com. Paid for by Johnson for Congress. Like you just can't win.
With today's Safe Money Moment, here's your host of Legacy Financial Strategies, David Gallner.
Did you know that over $10 billion in Social Security benefits go unclaimed each year? I can help you plan for a successful retirement and make sure you receive everything you're entitled to from Social Security. Call me now at 800-264-4963. That's 800-264-4963. It might be easier for you just to remember our website where you can learn so much more about us and hear archived radio and television shows and more. Go to leavealegacy.com. That's www.leavealegacy.com.
1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
Good morning. On Friday, speaking right here on First Take on the subject of domestic violence, I made what can only amount to the most egregious error of my career. While elaborating on thoughts concerning the NFL's ruling versus Ray Rice, following a domestic dispute with his then-fiancée, I ventured beyond the scope of our discussion by alluding to a woman's role in such heinous matters, going so far as to use the word provoke in my diatribe. My words came across that it is somehow a woman's fault. This was not my intent. It is not what I was trying to say. Yet the failure to clearly articulate something different lies squarely on my shoulders. To say what I actually said was foolish is an understatement. To say I was wrong is obvious. To apologize, to say I'm sorry, doesn't do the matter its proper justice, to be quite honest. But I do sincerely apologize. As a man raised by the greatest mother in the world and four older sisters, I've religiously spoken out against domestic violence all of my life. I've done so repeatedly over 20 years in this business, as well as over these very airwaves right here on First Take. My primary reason for doing so is because I've experienced and dealt with the matter within my own family. Unfortunately, I did an incredibly poor job of asserting my point of view this past Friday. For that, again, I am truly, truly sorry. Particularly to victims of domestic abuse and to my female family members and loved ones I've disappointed and who know I know better. You all deserved a better professional and, quite frankly, a better man last Friday sitting on this very set in this very chair. My heartfelt apologies to each and every single one of you.
Stephen Ayer.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229, and I'm sitting in the studio with both Eric and Sticks. And we were talking about Stephen A. Smith, and we've only got about 20 minutes left. And Eric wanted to say something, but I, and if you don't believe that that was what you call, they called in Olivia Pope and found somebody to make sure that he wrote a they wrote a speech. They put all the right words in it to execute it, but he probably meant it very, very much so that he said the wrong words. He's sorry that he said it. I believe he's very sincere. I don't think he should have had to apologize, and that's what all I'm saying. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, you know, I, as an outdoorsman, I'm reminded of a landmark case involving a mountain lion attack that resulted in a human fatality, one of fewer that took place in North America in the past 250 years. Scott Lancaster was jogging in the high school track behind his high school in Idaho Springs, Colorado, and he ran past a mountain lion who chased him and killed him. The day was Monday, January the 14th, 1991. Now, my point is that running past a mountain lion, any outdoorsman worth his salt will tell you, will trigger the instinctive response. I think the mistake we make in assessing domestic violence is trying to blur the line between instinctive responses and deliberate responses. And when you see someone who's on the edge, if a man sees his woman on the edge and vice versa, it's only the right thing to do to back off a little bit. I mean, I'm in full agreement with Tracy and Sticks on this one. I really am truly.
I don't think apology was warranted for it.
I don't think so either.
He wasn't offensive in what he said, even as a woman. And women need to understand they need to take responsibility in the relationship also and ease up. Now, I'm not saying, you know, there are some certain men who beat women just for the heck of beating them, and I'm not talking about that.
And a 1-week suspension for that, I mean, come on.
Well, the problem with society is our society, the pendulum has swung from one extreme to the other. I mean, we went from a society where a man could do anything to his wife he felt like 75, 80 years ago to one where the man's always at fault.
Yeah.
I mean, it swung, the pendulum has swung just completely the other direction.
And I understand the power that they say men have, but
women have a lot of power too, because the woman that loves you can emasculate you faster than anything
man.
On the planet.
Oh man!
Because they know what,
with her
what
mouth.
Cuts you to the core.
I will admit, I can my mouthpiece will drive a man nuts, but that doesn't give you the right to hit me.
Oh, but you have to at some point. Do you ever assess sometimes? Do you ever say things and then come back later and regret that you say it, or apologize, or recognize the gravity of some of the stuff that can come out of your mouthpiece?
No, because I don't really just say it out of anger. I'm saying it.
Then what do you say it out of?
Try to get a point across. And
what if the point's convoluted?
What do you mean convoluted?
Mixed up, disjointed, maladroit, or perhaps not.
No, I've never had
logic.
You've never done that, huh?
Oh. I've never done that. It's just that they can't.
So while you were married,
I'm gonna give
everything you said to your ex-husband, you didn't say anything to try to hurt him because he hurt you. Is that what you're saying?
No. We got arguments over money, but he couldn't handle the fact that I was I was right in the fact that, look, bills need to be paid. You need to be step up and make sure our bills are paid. So his decision to where he didn't want to hear, and then we got no arguments, I would walk away. He didn't want to walk away. He would come in and follow me. And that's when the physicality started. Well, when I realized, okay, he's stronger than me, there's no point in hitting back. I took the hits for a few months to where I decided, okay, you know what? One day, I almost took a knife and plunged it in his chest. Luckily, God was with me. I thought I had a thought of my daughter being in prison. I didn't. I got to that point, and I said, you know what? I can't do it anymore. But I also got into a provocation with a cousin because he was mad because somebody told him something that I did. Instead of coming to me about it, he was talking to someone else about it. So I tried to talk to him about it. He kept calling me the B word. Now, and me getting tired of being called the B word, I told him, F you. Now he comes all the way from a different room and punches me, throws me down, and continues to beat on me like I'm a man. I get up. He punches me again. I am unconscious.
Did you call the police?
In the emergency room.
That's a police call. I ain't talking about that.
Is because the police asked me, why did I provoke him?
I'm quite sure that may have come up, but that's not what we're talking about.
But
this
that's why a lot of people have a problem with when people say provoking and antagonizing, because you have to be more careful when using that word.
That is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is a man had to apologize for telling women to be responsible in the relationship and do not provoke your men to wrath. That's
again,
what we're saying. I'm not asking you for any more. I'm not asking you for no more dialogue on it. I'm not talking about that.
What's your definition of provocation?
Diva, I don't have to give you a Webster dictionary. If you can take the interpretation as you would. If you antagonize as a man like you do sometimes today, you got to understand.
So
you need
if
to
your
ease,
mouth
women
mouths
need
to
ease
him,
up. You need to
you
shut
have, if your
up
mouth
sometimes.
Him, he has a day, it's okay for him to punch you out.
Diva,
it's
sometimes
okay.
We need to shut up. Back up. Words are powerful.
A man will always send signals before he gets violent.
Sometimes they tell you, listen, leave me alone. And we keep on going. And we'll get in a space, we'll point our finger, we will spit all over, we'll hit, we'll do whatever it takes not to get hit, but because we're mad or we want to hurt him like he's hurt us. And what I'm saying is sometimes you got to back it up. You got to take a walk. He's got to wait, take a walk. But there's nothing wrong with telling a woman, sometimes you need to sit your little happy tail down and wait until you cool off. But don't try to antagonize and push a man to provocation. 440, your mic is on.
You know, as far as Stephen A. Smith, I mean, if he apologized, so he must be okay with apologizing.
He had a job.
You mean to tell me he's not any more principled than that? If he's that good, then he could get another job.
No, he couldn't.
Why?
Not now.
Because same reason Howard Cosell couldn't have.
No, you can't get a job when you do that kind of stuff. You can't get no job.
If he it doesn't matter. You know, if he was okay with it, he was okay with it.
No.
You got to be
smart. You know, I think I told you guys this story. The young kid came into my office several years ago, and we were doing counseling, and I don't take disrespect to parents well. And he called his mother a bitch in front of me. And I told him I'd put his behind through that wall, and I had to take a day suspension. I got to keep my job, and I had to apologize. But I still meant what I said. It's just that simple. You know, your day job is more important than, you know, your feelings. But he should not have, been asked to apologize.
It's their company.
He did what he had to do, and it's their company. And I'm not knocking him for doing it. He's taking his suspension. But I can sit here and talk about it and have my opinion. And my opinion is he should have never had to apologize, because what he said was it wasn't offensive. What he said was women need to take responsibility for the relationship that they're in.
And Tracy, what's the point of being a commentator if you can't? What's the point of being a commentator if you can't comment?
Good point. Excellent question.
Well, I agree with you, but you have to know who your boss is too. We all know that there's certain things that your boss doesn't like. I'm sure that he knows what he can get away with and what he can't get away with.
He didn't realize what he said was offensive because it wasn't.
Oh,
he's
not that stupid. Come on.
Yeah, he is.
Come on.
Yeah, he is.
He said it. I don't buy that.
Did you hear what he said? I just played it. You heard what he said. It wasn't offensive because he kept on saying, I'm not saying that this needs to happen this way. What he said was, women need to take responsibility. That's what he said. We're not talking about men who are dogs, who are beating up on women. We're not talking about that. But we need to teach our young girls not to provoke men, and we need to teach our young men not to hit on women, even when they're provoked.
Liberals are hypersensitive. We all know that. And that company, ESPN, they're all liberals. They're all liberals in the tank. I mean, he had to know that any little thing, there's going to be some kind of retaliation. He had
to
know
that. He's
not stupid.
He
knows that. He lost his mind there for a while. He
Remember,
does that
he's
when
a
he
liberal.
Speaks too.
But he's a liberal.
Yeah, well.
Then he's no better than
so
they are.
He should know that. Then he should know.
No, because liberals don't realize how liberal they are or how progressive they are. Remember, he is a black liberal.
Well, liberalism is a mental disorder, not a political persuasion.
But you have to understand, he is a black liberal.
That was a good
and
one.
Black liberals.
Made me laugh.
Jeez, oh man. Black liberals have an issue because they're not quite sure why they're liberal. They just follow the liberal movement. Go ahead, Alabama. Your mic is on. Good morning.
Good morning.
I knew I'd get you to push the button. You couldn't stand it.
Say what?
What do you think about the Stephen A. Smith apology and his suspension?
I'm upset about it. Kind of upset about it. I don't think it warranted anything. Not even an apology. Nothing. I mean, if she can't handle him just, you know, spewing his own personal opinion, then she needs to go somewhere and, you know, live in a box. Because that's just...
You got to realize, it wasn't the she. It was the whole women's movement that came out behind him on ESPN.
I understand
from the
that,
south side of Alec Baldwin.
Women have to understand that, look, you can't have it both ways. You can't be I am woman, hear me roar, I'm just as strong as men. Then when they say something hurts your feelings and ruffle your feathers, you want to cry, you know, victim. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we got to, you're messing up. Yeah, we have to do that. You know that. I just don't think they should have asked him for that. Hey, we've had a good show today, and I want to thank everyone who's called in, who's listened in. I want to thank Eric for showing up. Stick, thank you for being here with me tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be home alone. No, Mark. I think Mark. I don't know if Mark's coming in or not.
Want me to come in?
You can if you want to, but you have to. I got a show plan, so you got to stick with the show. It's not open mic. Open mic's on Mondays and Fridays.
Okay.
Tomorrow's show is going. I'm going to have a guy by the name of Joshua, and he has written a book. And let me get this right. So I can get it to you. And then Derek Green from Project 21 is going to be with me also. We're going to be talking about some domestic issues.
And, domestic is in household or domestic
is
in
policy. Policy. American
US
policy.
U.S. federal government
yeah,
policy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, not we're past.
No domestic bliss.
No domestic bliss.
it's baseball.
Sorry, none of that.
Clock's still fouling up, ain't it?
Oh, yeah. You didn't think you were going to be on time.
We got to get the clock fixed.
I know. I'm trying, but it's not. It's out of my hand.
You know, when you put the amateur on the other side of the table, he doesn't know how to work a bad clock.
And it's bad, isn't it?
It's bad.
Tomorrow we're going to talk about
I couldn't talk. I was in the elevator with some people.
With Josh.
So I couldn't.
And how the Obama administration does not like the Jewish state.
Well, we all know that President Obama
was
a sympathizer from childhood.
No, you don't know that.
Yes, we do. He said the most beautiful sound on earth is the sound of people being called to Muslim prayer.
That doesn't mean anything.
Well, I guess he had a heated argument with Netanyahu.
You say so.
You're giving. No, that doesn't mean anything. That's not what it means.
Well,
you didn't know that?
I mean something to me. I mean, you know.
They had a ceasefire for 4 hours. I don't know if they stuck to it.
No, it's my understanding Hamas broke it.
What is up with that? How you going to call it? They call for ceasefire so they can get the.
So they can reload. That's the thing. I mean, that's what it boils down to. They call for a ceasefire and Hamas just reloads.
Hey, I got a simple question for you guys. I need to. I need to know what is this with it when they have timeouts in the war? I mean, they got a conflict and everybody goes timeout. Let's go get the injured off the floor and then we go back. I don't understand.
I don't understand this concept of limited war. I've gotten in several arguments on Facebook about it. When a nation decides to go to war, it needs to be an unlimited war, which means you destroy the enemy's ability to fight back completely and totally. You destroy their infrastructure, you destroy their will to fight, and you do not stop blowing stuff up until they say, oh, that's what war
is. Hey, Tracy.
For. My question is, and I got to ask you again, what is that? Larry, your mic is on.
Hey, Tracy, you said a thing about I'm assuming it was Stephen A., that he was a liberal. Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah.
No, that's not true. He may vote for Democrats like the rest of us, but he has said some things. He has said some things, Tracy, that are very, very conservative. And it's just like some of the other African-American writers in the sports arena, like Jason Whitlock. If you sit down and listen to them and you didn't know what color they were by the whether they were on TV or on the radio, they're saying a lot of conservative stuff. Matter of fact, Stephen A. took a lot of heat from the African-American community because he said what Donald Sterling, he was actually saying it was wrong how they treated Donald Sterling in this whole deal. And he preached at the point.
Larry, did you miss me say he, Larry, did you miss me saying he was a black liberal?
I heard you say that, but he's not.
What does that mean? No, he is.
He voted Democrat. That's what it means. That's exactly what it means.
You voted that way.
You are a liberal. My sister-in-law says she's a conservative. You voted for Obama. You are not a conservative. Hey, Tracy.
Right, and I agree with that.
Hold on, Bianchi.
But that doesn't change the fact that they're conservative in their thinking, because and what they're
but
saying,
Larry,
their action. So,
but see, their action.
Know.
See, Larry, I can call myself a car all day long because I sit in the garage.
Yep.
But when I come out, I'm still not a car. These people, what happens is they call themselves, they do conservative talk. They do conservative speak, should I say that. They speak conservative, they think conservative, they live conservative, but they vote Democrat.
Oh, that apology really had him, that apology really had him up there looking PC and emasculated.
I look at that differently, Tracy. I say that guy is confused about what he is, because
hear me call him a black liberal?
Yeah, but I think you're
see,
wrong.
There
he's
you
a
go.
Black conservative.
He's a black liberal.
Dressed as,
No, because he won't vote for George W. Bush. He won't support George W. Bush, so he's a black liberal.
I voted for Romney myself.
We'll do this again, Larry. We have to have this conversation,
okay,
because I understand what you're saying. I really do, but you got to understand where I'm coming from. These guys are they're black. They conservative and all the way to the root until it comes when they go to the ballot box or who they go and support. They want business. They want small government. They want big business, and they want to be successful. But they want to vote. They want to vote Democrat. They want to be free, but they want to vote Democrat.
Hey, Trace.
Yeah, Bianchi.
Yeah, Clinton was right. I think one of the most beautiful sounds you can hear is called a prayer in a Muslim country.
Oh, you just trying to start a fight. I only got 10 seconds to go.
I've been there. But
Trace,
you know what?
WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229.
That's funny.
Oh, she went off the air.
And I voted for Rocky Johnson. I didn't vote for Romney. I couldn't. Romney's crazy. I ain't crazy, but I didn't like his politics.
Rocky Johnson.
Yes.
There was a Rocky Johnson.
New Mexico.
So. Hello? Hello? I hear somebody there. Is either air or is Alabama making all that noise? Princess, stop.